from the Film Gronk Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City. This is Film Gronk. Today's film is the 1971 classic, The Omega Man. My name is Serge Delpierre, and today we have on our esteemed panel...
Tim McMillan.
And...
Duncan K. Fraser.
And...
Jim Usterman.
What? Okay, so, as we were just discussing before we even started... Okay, our cue point for this, well, it's really interesting. It's going to be the very first frame of the film. It would seem that when you pop this DVD in, if you start it from whatever menu you manage to find, it goes right into the film. So basically, black, 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 and then you get a frame of film. So I think zero is black, so just inch your way up, you know, hit on pause and just...
Frame
until it comes up, and within a few frames, we've all got it there. You should be looking at a nice orange crane on a Sunday morning in Los Angeles at some point when they shot this.
Beautiful that, cloudless sky.
That's right. That is our cue point. So we're going to give you a chance to actually do that. In the meantime, we're going to talk just a little bit about The Omega Man, and then when we're ready to go, I will count down 3, 2, 1, play, and we will... have this play on, and then you'll be able to listen to this wonderful commentary along with watching the movie, or you can listen to it while you are
frame
or
black,
killing dead vampires or something.
Oh
like
yeah,
this.
Sorry,
or,
yeah,
or,
yeah.
Wow.
Sucking blood.
Spending a lonely day in L.A.
Spending a lonely day in L.A. in your car, exactly, just like Charlton Heston.
Thinking about the many incarnations of this wonderful
and,
movie.
And while he plays, right. What does he play? He plays
Max Steiner, Summer Place.
Summer Place, that's right. On the not the Percy Faith version, but...
I think it's the original soundtrack, yeah.
Many incarnations.
No, it's a re-record
film.
For the film.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah, it's totally re-recorded. It's totally cheesy saxophone, re-recorded a little bit of piano tinkling. In the
I didn't know if Max Steiner did a pop version at the time.
I don't think he did. I think it was just, Percy Faith is the one who made that popular.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay.
I think that made the big hit that it was. Mm-hmm. So, Tim,
wow,
tell
you guys
us.
Know your
we're
stuff.
Just off and running.
Oh yeah. Let me tell you. The gym's over here.
I'm like, wow.
You think you'll like The Omega Man?
Dinner parties here must be interesting.
Yes.
So, Tim, why don't you talk about your origins with The Omega Man?
First off, I am heavily biased by nostalgia. I will say that. Just as a kid, I mean, me and my brothers, whenever this was on TV, Omega Man, Omega Man, you know, and that was that. But I think what works in this works so well, and I think the idea, as always, I just think the idea and the main plot device for this film is such a wonderful potential, And this is a good installment for like a 1970 version of this nugget of great plot device. And I loved my Charlton Heston.
Well, you know, Charlton Heston, especially in the 70s with Omega Man and Soylent Green.
And Planet of the Apes.
And Planet of the Apes.
The dark sci-fi. Yeah.
I mean, he was so hot here. I mean, this was his, you know, his time. And amazing films. You know, I mean, I was really young when this came out, and it was fantastic. It was so freaky.
I mean, you can see the seams of the production. You can see the seams of the budget, and just as far as on a production level, it dates it. It's considered cheesetastic now to a good degree by a newer generation, I think, more than likely if you were to take a poll.
I'm the newer generation.
But
I will contribute.
But and it's dated by some, you know, over the top elements and everything. But for me, I just it's like a comfy blanket I like to put on every now and then and enjoy.
And with Charlton, I mean, would I be out of Charlton Heston, William Shatner-esque almost performances at times? Sometimes it seems like he gets
there's
both
some line deliveries
in very similar ways.
There's some line deliveries that are
I will.
You think no?
Oh,
I've never thought about it that way. I can definitely see that parallel.
Shatner's a good actor, but Charlton Heston's a great actor. But that's just me.
But occasionally,
who could read the phone book and make it sound convincing? Two actors:
the handyman,
Charlton Heston, and Richard Burton.
Is that right? Make it sound convincing.
I think they both did it on Johnny Carson at one point or another.
Really?
It was awesome.
Did you ever see the SNL sketch where Phil Hartman was Charlton Heston reading Madonna's sex book for an audio tape thing? Oh, God. YouTube guys,
next
check
week
into
we'll
it.
Be re- we'll
you'll,
be re-
you'll love it.
I really
reviewing
need to
that.
Add one name, though, to the list of the phone book readers, and that's James Earl Jones.
Oh, yes, James Earl Jones could do that, too.
Just as far as presence, Charlton Heston, you can't.
Oh,
that's
no.
Some major presence
Gravitas,
this guy has.
Incarnate.
This is also a huge chunk of nostalgia for me too. I saw this, I think maybe in 71, likely more like in 72.
Really?
As Film Grok listeners will know, I am from Montreal, Quebec, and in Quebec we had different rating than in the United States. Instead of G, PG, R, and whatever, and they had X at the time, we had for all 14 and over and 18 and over. And when the Omega Man came out, this was 14 and over, and I was not 14. So get out your calculators, people. And so I wasn't able to see it in the movie theater. So, of course, already then there was a mystique, other than the fact that it was the Mega Man. It was the last man on Earth. And it was Charlton Heston. It was all this around it. I mean, it's already there's a bunch of
monsters.
Mythos. Just last man on Earth. Just very much, wow, cool. I mean, I'm trying to remember. The memory's a little spotty on what moments of nostalgia, but I just remember the feeling of it. And then we went, we used to go across the border to Plattsburgh to the drive-in, because I don't think there was a drive-in in Montreal quite yet. And we went down to Plattsburgh.
Crowded there.
And it took about an hour. It takes about an hour to get there from Montreal. And we went down there, and we saw, there was a double feature. And we saw something, and we saw the Omega Man, I think, was the first film. And I was like, wow. I was like, it was exciting, because then I could see it, because in the States it was PG.
You're the only person I know that crossed the border to see movies.
See?
I thought I was dead.
I want to go get medication. I want to go see a show.
I want to get fireworks.
It's what happens when you live on a border town. Border town? What are you
talking
about? It just
has a great ring to it.
Anyone
cross the border.
I remember smuggling into the United States to see black market movies.
Hey, let me tell you, back during Prohibition, you know who made a lot of money? The Canadians.
God bless them.
That's where you had the Molsons, the O'Keefes. I mean, there were big breweries now. This is how they made their money, because they made alcohol and they basically sold it illegally.
Canadians always sucking on us. Leeches.
Yeah, that's
right.
It had
a slight Heston-esque delivery to it right
there. Well,
they really did.
Anyway, so.
You damn dirty Canadians.
Point is, saw the film, loved it. Of course, over the years I've watched it. Once again, it is like a warm blanket. I come
back
to it.
It's my snuggie.
It's like a warm blanket?
A warm blanket.
It's my snuggie.
I've got two or three films that are my warm blankets. And this is one of them. Though, of course, as you get older, you watch it and go like, okay, there's the seams. Okay, this looks good. This doesn't look good. Okay, and some things obviously don't work as well over time.
And it wouldn't be the same film without the seams. To me, it's endearing, and
interesting.
You know,
yeah,
for me.
Although when I watch Speed Racer, it's not endearing. It's not.
So I will speak for Duncan just briefly here. I'm the one who introduced Duncan to the Omega Man.
Yeah,
nice.
I'm not speaking. Sarah's just speaking for me.
I just wanted to say that.
It's a seat filler.
So Duncan, Duncan, tell us about the first time you watched the Omega Man with me.
Right. Serge was so on about this movie, and I had already seen I Am Legend, and I was not educated on the finer points of incarnations of this book at that time. So I saw I Am Legend with Will Smith, and it's okay. But then he's like, oh, Omega Man, it was an earlier version of that. And I'm like, oh, God. A movie in the 60s, 70s, whatever. It's got Charlton Heston. I was a baby when it came out, or maybe not even born. And it's patterned after the same book as I Am Legend, which was just okay. I'm like, I wasn't excited about it. But and all you warm blanket people are looking at me askance. I can see it in your eyes. But
disdain.
Disdain.
You better say the right thing.
One of us. So when I watched it, though, I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't it was not what I expected. And, of course.
In what way?
I'm getting to that.
Okay, all
right. Tim automatically.
There was
explain
sound.
Yourself. Right. First there was sound, and
it's
then
too
color.
Big.
So those were two big things. No. Right. I think it was just the differences in the plot between that and I Am Legend and the similarities. Like, I sort of at that point, was approaching it sort of like a study in book translation into film.
1971. Kind of. Were there dinosaurs then?
I know, right? P.S., thank you for confirming the date it came out. That was 5 years before I was born. So,
well, there you go.
So, anyway, and
by
I hadn't
the way,
seen
have to change
Charlton
Duncan.
Heston. I haven't seen Charlton Heston in that many things. Of course, I've seen the classics, the Ten Commandments, Planet of the Apes.
Ben-Hur,
a few others. Mm-hmm. But he definitely isn't an actor that figures prominently in my personal,
Cinema experience.
Cinema experience. Yes. Right. Thank you for that phrase.
But you want to talk about the NRA. That's what you know.
I know, right? Well, actually, I grew up in Kentucky, so I can definitely talk about the NRA and Charlton Heston and that, which seems very, very, like, now that I have lived here in Hollywood, it seems extremely incongruous from him being such a Hollywood star to going, you know, into this ultra-conservative thing and leading the NRA. Like, that just fascinates me. It kind of makes me want to learn more about Charlton Heston. But in any
case,
this movie...
You make a good point, actually. You make a good point.
Like
it, to,
it's an odd dichotomy.
Where he's plugged in his environment, in his industry, compared to who he was and his beliefs and integrity and his ethics as a person.
Yeah,
and
which,
they,
by the way, I know nothing
actually,
about.
And he held firm in a place where it was not popular to do so.
And how can you say anything but good for you in that, you know? So this movie, the photography is outstanding, by the way, especially for 71. Of course, we're watching it on Blu-ray, but still.
That's Russell Meddy, who's the DP.
Oh, okay.
Isn't
Russell
it?
Meddy.
Russ Meddy.
Yeah, I have it on here somewhere.
Do you know what else he did?
Russ Meddy is huge. He worked for Universal for many, many years.
My current company.
And
nice.
He did beautiful Technicolor stuff for them. But Charlton Heston loved Russ Meddy mainly because Russ Meddy was good and fast. Charlton Heston noted one of his autobiographies that Russ Meddy, his setups, boom, bang, boom, 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 had him down, and he banged it out every day.
Must have had a kick-ass lighting crew. You couldn't do that without
Russ
that.
Meddy would just look at something and tell everyone what to do for the setup without having to lift a finger, and they'd be ready to shoot. So Charlton Heston loved that, and the Omega Man especially. Wrote that during this production he was glad Russ Meddy was the DP because he was fast and
good.
Well,
you can imagine with the constraints of filming in downtown Los Angeles. I mean, you had to be fast because you couldn't close the streets up, I'm sure.
Not for that long.
Well, basically, how they did this is they shot this on Sunday mornings, Sunday mornings, but really they had to do it very early and basically hold a lot of traffic around, and you know, you do have to be quick. You got to be on the ball for that.
Right. Now, just FYI, according to Wikipedia, this is based on a book by Richard Matheson, published in 1954. And now it says the novel was titled I Am Legend.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
The novel is
entitled I Am Legend.
And in 1964, it was made into The Last Man on Earth, starring
Vincent Price. It was an Italian production. And then this was in 1971. And then we had I Am Legend in 2007.
Yeah.
Actually, well, originally what they tried to do was...
Well, it was released in 07.
Well, they tried to get a production going with Arnold Schwarzenegger for a number of years, never happened.
Yeah. That would have been
Actually, there was a Mark Protasevich script that floated around that I read, which was... it was just more of... It looked a lot of what, I Am Legend now is. You know, it's like a lot of CG-type vampires floating
around. Occurred to me in our conversation before the recording started, but it seems to me like the book has never really had a really fair film treatment. And I think what I'm picking up here, it's because there are concepts in it that are risky to try to express in film when you're talking about selling a lot of popcorn. An action film theoretically sells more popcorn, if you take my meaning, than a
more intellectual, morality kind of
deal. But the action could be there, too. I think maybe somebody really needs to give this book, a really, really good treatment.
But that's where the Vincent Price version, which was not well done, did follow most closely to what the book was.
Right. But I remember you saying it was crappy.
Well, no, it wasn't a good film. It was an Italian film. Was dubbed in English. I mean, Vincent Price.
Lord.
It has its moments.
It has its moments, okay. But overall, it plays a cheesy '60s film. But the script was closest to what the book was about. Because basically, in the book, and I'm assuming everyone's watched the movie, so nothing's being spoiled. But in the book, basically, Neville encounters a woman. And he's been killing vampires, and everything. And he's been doing experiments on vampires. And he meets a woman, and she's the first woman he's seen in ages. And he takes her into his house, and it turns out that she's part of there's two sets of vampires. The real vampires are more like zombies in the book, quite frankly. And then there's the half vampire, half humans. And he's just been killing them all indiscriminately. And he's considered a very big criminal, a war criminal, a genocidist.
So the vampires have formed a society.
Basically, they have. Yeah. But it's like in this film, where the sense that they've formed their society, only these guys are lunatics in this one, and Neville is still the enemy. He's still killing and, staking, right? He's not staking them all here because they're not, this is more of a biological, they adapted it for the 70s, more biological warfare victims.
Right. Yeah.
Well, very
my understanding. And in the book,
but he still goes out and tries to find their nests and kill them because they're homicidal, or he experiments on them. So they kind of kept some elements of it, but in there, the whole thing was the woman who betrayed him, because what happens is she lets them come in and take him away, and then he's taken away, and basically at the end he's executed. We don't see the execution, but that's where the book ends also. Mm-hmm. Whereas here in the movie, it's different. He meets the others, the people I like to call the Omega people, and they had spent time with Matthias, basically they're not with him. They don't betray him to him. Well, actually, in a way, Eric Lenouville kind of does, but all out of innocence as opposed to how it was in the book. So they took some elements to mm-hmm. it. And actually, and we're going to get going in a second, Joyce, I think this was the script was written by Joyce Corrington, the Corringtons.
Let's see, written by John William Corrington and Joyce Cage Corrington.
Who were instrumental in writing Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, look at that.
Yes.
Look at that.
Right,
nice one.
Back to
pulls
the
that out.
Films.
Hey, real quick opinion.
Yes.
Before we get started, while we're on this frame.
Yes.
Opinions. Yes. Who thinks that Passport Scotch got like a... product placement deal in this.
I don't think so. I think it was likely just we're pointing the camera this way.
Yeah. We're glad to have a piece of road.
Yeah, this is
not
the guerrilla filmmaking sequence.
This is
just stole the shots.
This
and
is
got
it.
Out
we're
of
getting
there.
We're getting the shot. We're getting, we'll get clearances serious. Afterwards, and we're fine. With a billboard like that,
in and out clearances.
They would have had to got clearances for all that stuff. I mean, just on a legal basis.
I mean, even Sunday morning though, you would have some cars.
But
and you can actually see them.
Really
you see them in the film.
Right.
There are cars if you look closely.
If you look closely, but they managed to block off, for all the major stuff.
For the major chunk of frame, you don't. But if you look peripherally, which is always my favorite place to look in movies, because I always look where you're not supposed to, that's where you find the most juicy stuff, you'll see the cars.
Oh. Now, but might be worth mentioning that there's an unofficial fourth I Am Omega. That you said was
doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. But it's not really credited.
No,
to the book.
Yeah, it was a ripoff of I Am Legend done by the Asylum, and they just took the bare.
And it came out in 2007 too.
Yeah, just watch the Omega Man. Okay,
and I will say I don't think this theme has been done given justice in any film production of it since I Am Legend. I think it still has yet to be done. As well as it can be done, but Omega Man's my favorite.
About the morality message of you
just
have
all the,
to keep,
all the dramatic
keep up
setups
with...
that could be mined from this setup, but Omega Man's my favorite one. Sit down and watch of everything that's been attempted so far.
I am in agreement.
You guys are romantic, so.
Aw. Okay, we're gonna start.
Nostalgia.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, pick up your remotes, point them at your favorite player.
Here it comes.
We're gonna count down 3, 2, 1. Play. Okay. There we go. Okay, there it started. It delayed for just a second, so you might be half a second off. And look at that. We have, what kind of car is that? That's a red Cadillac?
No, it's not a Cadillac.
It's a red convertible.
Yeah.
This is awesome. This is great photography.
Oh, yeah, there are the cars way in the back. I'll be darned. Thank you,
Eight-track tape. Nice.
Yes.
That's a summer place.
You say, oh, there goes a car.
Yeah, there's another.
I didn't see a person
walking in the background, too, actually.
Oh, stop it.
They
did what they could. I'm still buying that there is no one around, and Charlton Heston's just driving around.
Yeah, that is the idea.
This is a very nice shot right here.
This
Let's
one,
just make
here
sure
they
that
cleared,
you understand
they
that.
Cleared everything here. I love how you can just hear the music. So you're definitely getting, because you don't know. You come into this like, what's going on? The Omega Man. I love the title. I can tell.
The producer of this
He's
film
driving on the wrong
the
side.
The one that came up with the title.
He's driving on the wrong side of the road, too. Look at that.
Yeah.
He's
nice.
Driving on the left.
Making a point.
He's like, I don't care.
It's a great way to bring the audience into the film.
He just.
Stop signs don't matter.
Yeah, I'm just.
He really should clean up this place.
No, that's downtown.
Are you serious?
That's that's a downtown side street.
Yeah.
Now this,
undercranked,
that's on the studio. That's right.
And now the audience is going, what the heck?
Cue the music.
And there's your NRA moment right there, Doug.
That's right.
Right?
I like, you see he's got his gas can. Oh, damn it, the gas can's gone. I hate continuity errors. Mm.
That was an old German submachine gun, by the way.
Oh, here comes the music. Awesome
now,
music.
Oh, look at that logo.
Kenny Leisure.
For a while, I guess Warner Brothers was a Kenny Leisure company.
We do Service need to mention, though? I don't know if it's pronounced Grenier, but Ron Grenier, who wrote this score.
Yes. Who also did the music for The Prisoner.
That's right.
Hmm.
It's a wonderful theme. This is
excellent,
a nice
title sequence.
60s theme here.
Yeah, I love this music for this movie.
Walter Seltzer is the one who came up with the name, the Omega Man, for this project.
Now, this is a great shot because this they art directed, and then they just, pan over, and then they get, obviously, this is second unit stuff.
Where's his car? Where's his car? There's his car.
That's right. Get him. Where is he? Well, that's obviously not Mr. Heston, but...
You think that they hesitated a little on that rip?
Now, this is on the back lot. You can kind of tell. So, of course, now we're getting like all the hints of the destruction.
Right. That was Peter Rabbit right there.
Yes. And no Happy Easter's here. And now they're back downtown.
Mm-hmm. Same shot or same area, by the way, just a lower
that
angle.
That was. Yeah. Actually, that was the second camera. They had two cameras going for that shot.
Yeah. No
but
doubt.
That's okay.
It's a wonderful theme.
I'm watching this, and I don't care. Because Joe Knute is the action coordinator.
Gordon which is Yakima Canutt's son.
Oh, sorry, Canutt. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, who Yakima Canutt did the chariot race sequence for Ben-Hur.
That's right. And Joe Knute worked a lot with Heston. Actually, he was a stunt double, right, for some stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Joe Knute was a stunt double in Ben-Hur, I believe.
I think so.
Chariot, and he actually fell out of the chariot one
now,
shot.
Now, Boris Segal.
Katie Segal's dad.
Yes, he Boris Segal died a very unfortunate death. We'll talk about that later.
Whoa.
I like how there was
Well, so far he drives like everyone else in L.A.
Of course, we haven't heard anything, and he comes. I love this line. Hang on.
Whenever I see humor in a situation,
I know. Whenever I seen the theater, everyone would crack up, and of course,
gold bars and money. Just...
Here you go. There was still in those last moments. There was still crime. That's a nice old car.
Mm-hmm. Kind of liking his polyester safari outfit.
It was the '60s. Oh, so Duncan.
Finally pressed. By the way,
that gun is a what?
I believe that is a Sten. Submachine gun in 9mm that would have been like almost a World War II relic. I'm sure they have like later versions. I'm not really that familiar with World War II era firearms.
That was a pretty cool shot of him walking through the
street. That was wonderful.
This was styles of the 70s, the safari jackets.
Oh, yes, this is the Warner back lot. I recognize exactly where this is.
But that is Warner back
lot. I can do that with Paramount.
Is that an Opel?
That was the street there. Where they shot Casablanca.
Oh, no kidding.
He's in there looking at the Opel.
Well, we got the date now, March 75.
Well, at least when this started.
Right, at least when the catastrophe happened, whatever it was.
I like that the comment's $22,000.
Wow.
It's like, get that out of my face.
I like the calendar that's a sexy woman, but done in pastels.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
not a photo.
Knew how to do the calendars back then. And now he starts talking to himself.
Isn't this sort of like the setup? I mean, it's like Castaway meets.
No, that's an
Castaway
Opel. This is they have an interesting selection of variety of cars.
Mm. Well, I mean, they picked some fancy car. I mean, then again, when do you have cars in like a little showroom like that?
True.
I never saw Castaway, but Tom Hanks talks to the volleyball, correct?
Yeah, well, they make a whole thing of that, making it a character. Yeah.
Charlton Heston came up with the idea of the statue of the general to talk to.
Julius Caesar?
He'd have monologues.
Yeah.
Charlton Heston likes his monologues.
So that he would have them.
Well, no, but it works very well.
It works well for the audience.
You have to have some
device,
exposition.
Cinematic
in a
device.
Film or a narrator. It doesn't work otherwise.
I like how he's just talking away. I'm getting the car. He's got his plan.
He did not clean that window safely.
No.
Well, I don't think he gives a crap.
And then right through the shop.
Yeah. Oh, it's a nice Mustang. I always wanted a Mustang.
He likes his convertible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does. Well, so I guess he can like get out and shoot stuff with his machine gun, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's California, so you want to enjoy the
weather.
Of course.
What theater is this?
I don't know, but it was Heston's idea to have the clip of Woodstock in this film.
Yeah. Well, it's doubly ironic. Because Woodstock was not even that... Woodstock had happened like 2 years before, and the film had come out like just that year.
But Heston screened many, many films of what would represent mankind and humanity that would be running in this theater, and he picked these clips from Woodstock.
Interesting.
That's the best way to summarize what the script was asking for. Yeah.
Mr. Heston had a lot of control, didn't he?
And
he did. Yeah, if you read his, I forget if it's An Actor's Life or which book of his it is, but it has a great outline of the Omega Man in several chapters of him talking about this project.
Yeah.
And how it actually was worked out and made.
Yeah.
It's good reading, very good reading.
Actor's Life?
An Actor's Life?
An Actor's Life. I think he's got another book also.
I think
also.
It was An Actor's Life.
Yeah, he wrote two books, yeah. So definitely, they are definitely worth
actually,
a read
he's written more
for
than
his
that.
Films, yeah.
But,
yeah. No,
It is, actually. They are really good to get an idea of how things happen.
An Actor's Life is a wonderful book.
Interesting point of note, in the current one, he's afraid, like Will Smith's character is afraid to go into dark buildings because that's where they hang out.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that he's going into a movie theater, you know, a dark building,
true.
Essentially.
True.
And watching this thing.
It might, well, actually.
It's a dark building during the day.
But actually, it's been established
right.
that he's gone to this theater a
right.
number
well,
of times.
He's got a generator there already.
He's got the generator. All he's doing is watching Woodstock, you know, and he knows the words.
But he's putting himself in a bad position in case there's some.
Right, it's somewhere they can go.
My implication
basically.
Is that he's already kind of, he's secured it, so he knows they won't get in there, is my idea.
He's cleaned it out.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, it is his one of his spaces.
Yeah, I can see that. They just wouldn't show.
You know, I love what the guy says there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
Or any kind.
They don't make any kind. Yeah, and that's the thing. He's like...
It's interesting when you compare this to Planet of the Apes, his monologue at the beginning of that film about there's got to be something better.
Now, here's a little thing.
Humanity.
I love that he looked, you know, his watches, the faces underneath it. Now, the phone thing.
Wow.
I get it. But this is the only time it happens in the film. That's what bugged me. It's
what
like,
is it?
Well, he's basically hallucinating. He thinks all the phones are ringing, which... But this is the only time they do anything like that. After this, the phone thing is gone.
Oh.
There's no, like, I imagine seeing
continuity
someone.
Continuity to it.
It's too bad.
I mean, I guess it sets up the whole thing of whether he sees someone, you know, when he sees, was it Rosalind Cash? Is it Rosalind Cash?
Mm-hmm.
You know... Whether she's really there, but.
Oh, good. That was easy.
Right?
See, all you have to do is yell loud enough and the hallucinations
will stop.
Goes
away.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my God. Only he could pull off that line.
It's dark.
That was definitely ADR.
Oh, my God. It's almost dark.
I have to get back to the Warner lot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Oh, my goodness.
Because these are all great shots of L.A. I mean, this is all awesome stuff. Look at this. Oh, there's a car driving in the back. Damn it.
Don't tell.
Curses.
I didn't see
curses, Blu-ray, curses.
Right.
I willfully ignore it.
For some reason, the close-ups of him from the side remind me of my grandpa. My grandpa, like, 20 years ago.
Oh, now we're on the lot.
Oh, we're totally on the lot now.
Whoa, hold on there. Has he been drinking?
Moonshine.
Well, I hope so.
And anyone who watches Friends, the end credits where they're dancing in the fountain.
In the fountain right
and
here.
And then they turn off all the lamps and the lights and the buildings go off as well. Those buildings are this set. This is the Omega Man set on the ranch.
Oh, no kidding.
Of the Warner lot.
Yeah,
the fountain
the
is the fountain where Charlton Heston died at the end of this movie.
Careful, look out!
This is still there. This backlot set right here. The driveway... All this is still standing in the same condition.
Ooh. And there's
this is one of my favorite themes that Ron Grenier came up with for the film. I love the family theme.
Right. And boom, into the boxes.
Nice.
The requisite
empty
boxes.
Boxes.
That was a nice stunt.
Kill the bad guy. Kill the bad guys.
Kill the bad guys. Kill the bad guys.
That's enough excitement for one day.
I think if I were him, every now and then, I would do something like that just to remind myself that the danger was real. And for a little exercise.
Let them break
to stay
in.
Frosty.
Yeah. That's right.
Huh?
Now, I like
to
how
stay frosty.
Stay frosty.
Yeah,
that's
right. I like how the padlocks are so secure because it's the tiny little kinds that no one could actually take bolt cutters and get through. But
the
saying.
Idea is great. The idea is awesome.
The idea is great. Exactly the three. It's because one's not enough.
I love the idea of his self-sustaining fortress. It's awesome.
Right? Well,
this is like the Batcave.
Well, but the thing is that why didn't he protect the front of his building better?
And there's a Friends fountain right there.
Okay.
No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the lights are what protect him, and he didn't get home in time because he would have turned the lights on before.
Now, why they're not on a timer?
Apparently the lights on his
question.
Car are still on.
Well, the motor's still on.
Oh.
Good call, though, Jim.
Well, you know. I like to be a responsible vehicle owner.
It's our funky, jazzy now, see, Omega Man theme.
My problem with this is that once he goes upstairs, there's no way to lock this from the outside.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
If you really pick it apart, he has a lot of vulnerabilities in his fortress.
But he's,
yeah, that's true.
We could totally take him.
Oh, totally.
Here we go.
Were like
flashback.
Half zombie vampire things.
Flashback.
Totally, oh, because he pressed the button.
Stock footage.
Chuck remembers.
Yeah.
Scary things in the 70s, I guess. Like, well, flying rockets and explodey things.
Well, I mean, at the time, the big scare was chemical. Well, no, it was biological weapons. I mean, there was obviously nuclear, but biological weapons were concerned.
It's also
about.
Very topical in the last few years.
Yeah. Well,
true.
And what actor would this
name?
Be, Serge?
Yeah.
This actor is, Anthony Zerbe, popular actor who had done films but did a lot of TV work, too.
Would you say this is your favorite role of his on film?
I don't know. I think that he was in several Clint Eastwood. I think this is the biggest role I've ever seen him in a film. And definitely memorable because it's a cult favorite
I'll
of mine.
I'll tell you
so.
One that all of us have seen recently that he was in.
The Matrix.
Yes, he played Elder Haman.
Yeah, he was okay in that. I mean, this he got to really act. He got to.
The second
it was
Matrix
awesome
film.
You were able to pull out that name.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to pull
told
that.
You,
so here we go. Now, this is Julius.
Our volleyball.
This is a bust of Julius Caesar.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. With a little World War II accoutrement.
Which is interesting. It's a little on the symbolic side. You know, it's there's a lot of old world stuff here.
And we have a very poor miniature out the window of the supposed fires
and
that are happening.
Look at that big screen.
And this is all optical. This is all optical effects. Which, actually, for the time, something like this was kind of cool.
They ran two cameras on that.
Oh, they ran it from
the
side?
Separate angle.
Side.
That's his.
Mm-hmm. That's neat.
Mostly, I like to watch myself.
I see the huge, huge fires out the window.
Oh, my God. Look at this. That's awesome.
No, actually, those I think are fires. They're,
I thought it was a fireplace.
It's fire on the edge of the balcony, I think.
I don't believe so. I thought it was the family that are.
Oh, really?
Burning,
because they use
burning
it,
the
they,
city?
They use it again when they try to set him on fire, and he's looking out there.
Are there that you can hear them outside?
Yeah. Those are the fires that are supposed to represent them. That's what I've always thought.
Okay.
If I'm wrong, let me know, because I'd have more appreciation for the production value of the film
about,
if I were
about
wrong.
To find out.
Oh, I think you're right. I was trying to respect the integrity of my memory,
FYI,
but I think it's gone.
You're wrong. I'm just kidding.
That's fire right there.
That's
fine.
Oh,
yeah, good point, huh?
And
it's
other
not
fires,
even the right
so.
Angle.
I know. They tried.
Although it's good that they have something. You're right. That's a horrible miniature.
Oh my god!
It's
gosh.
Good that they have something going on, though. I mean, I understand what they're trying to do.
They could
have
done
trying to have something.
Yeah, but come on.
They could have done it.
Life.
They could have done it. They could have done a trans. Right. They could have done a translate out there. I mean, ooh, wow. See, what was great about this, I mean, this is important. I mean, Charlton Heston was, he had been a big star, and his career had changed a little in the 60s, and he was still a leading man. And for him to be now in this science fiction film and being the last man on Earth, it's like him being Moses in a way.
Mm.
You know, he was that significant and that important and carried that kind of weight at the time.
Great rendition of the family theme. That was my favorite.
And there we go, Anthony Zerbe.
And there he is.
So now we get to see him in his new...
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest thrills I had when I moved here to L.A. was visiting this back lot set. It's the Omega Avenue. I mean, it's great.
Oh,
you just
no
walk
kidding.
Up to it, and it's all exactly the same as
done.
The movie. It's the one
know.
Set that
still
has been
Warner
unchanged.
Brothers?
It's on the Warner Ranch.
Wow.
It's across the street from the Partridge Family House and Bewitched House.
I'll be darned. I got to go take
a it's one heck of a block.
There already. They still do tours there?
Now here,
not
on
the ranch, but
the
on
ranch.
The main lot they do.
Right. Oh, okay.
Not on the ranch.
Now here we've just gotten enough information to know where they're coming from and... kind of the schisms, well, not the slight schisms in what they're doing.
You know, I think one recurring theme that would have been like very timely, but still somewhat cutting edge in the time was equalization of race.
Mm-hmm.
Because, they've made all these people the same color and they clearly have different features. And then, of course...
Right, see, he even says, honky parodies. He says, forget the old ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything is now new.
To me, a lot of this film is like Zombie Shaft.
The
way,
the
way you have, Honky Paradise, brother,
that's
and all
right.
this thing Zombie happening. It's like,
but
and the message here, though, is pretty important. I mean, this is the morality sort of you know, laid out
of this world. But they, basically, it's their new world and it's his old world.
Right.
Only we identify with his old world and they're homicidal maniacs.
Now, similarly, though, they.
But, I mean, that's the way it's framed.
I think this says more about the filmmakers. Maybe it's this way in the book, but the woman who shows up in this movie is black,
right?
And Charlton Heston is white.
That, and, I think that was a more function of the times of trying to introduce a new element.
But in
to
I Am
times.
Legend, Will Smith is black, and then the woman that shows up is white.
I think that was negligent. I don't think it was as much of an issue because here, I mean, definitely race issues were definitely being brought to the fore.
Right.
With civil rights and everything, black power.
Right, right.
Definitely.
Like, his love scenes with Roseanne Cash were hugely controversial
in this part of
the country when this film came out.
Sure.
It's Rosalind Cash.
What did I call her?
Roseanne Cash.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Rosalind Cash.
That's Johnny Cash's daughter.
That's the director's cut.
Different
sorry.
Right.
and now we go into the flashback about. So they kind of work the flashbacks in really interestingly, you know,
mm-hmm.
by going to that.
The backstory is
and now
being given to us.
Now we're getting the world is coming to an end.
I love that we get to see that he was the news anchor.
Right.
Love
and then
that.
We get to see people, and this would freak me out. It's like, oh my God, it's people dying in the streets. Oh no. I mean, for me, as a child, you're like captures your imagination. Like, oh,
sure.
You know, and so for me, that's the idea is you get enough of it's the footprint in the snow, and then you fill in the blanks for everything else. So we imagine everything's and this is great setup.
It's a freeze frame.
A couple
of the people,
just a couple dead in front of the TV. Just cut them down like that. Actually, this was like a year after the Andromeda Strain, and so the Andromeda Strain was about the same type of thing about a biological attack of some sort. That was just
this must have been like a very timely topic then.
Absolutely, the whole idea of biological warfare or just organisms that could basically kill people. Oh, that's fine.
He was just dying then. They were showing him dying.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Okay. Colonel Robert.
And he was
Neville.
A doctor.
Colonel Robert Neville, doctor. Actually, in the book, Neville was not a doctor. That's just like a concoction for the films.
And for I Am Legend, apparently.
Well, wasn't Vincent Price was a doctor, wasn't he? He was a chemist in his.
Was he? I don't. It's been a while since
he's worked. He had a chemistry lab with the guy that turned into a zombie. It was his partner.
Ben. Yeah, Ben whatever.
Lab guy. Yeah.
Okay, so what in the book, what did the hero do?
He was just a guy.
So what was he? What experiments did he run?
I think he was running experiments on the vampires, and essentially what he found out that basically it was a microbe that got into their blood.
Mosquito bites. Mosquitoes in the book.
And essentially what it did is it sealed, each cell became autonomous and sealed itself off. So that's why, and essentially killing the organism and then becoming alive and functioning all together.
Freaky.
And that's why they
Warner Brothers.
Would need blood or something like that. Oh, that's right. This is. I like how they have that smoke going off in the back, like something bad's happening because something's burning.
And there's the lights reflected in the helicopter.
there they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you can. Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah, they had to punch the HMIs.
This is a bit contrived, but it does set up the film.
Yeah.
The timing of this.
There was nothing moving in the reflection on that either.
Yeah, that's
see
okay.
That?
We're
well, it's a cloudless sky.
Actually, is that a tree reflected?
It's a tree.
Yeah, it's
a
tree.
It's a big old tree in the middle.
Yeah, it's a cloud tree.
Yeah. And some sort of, I don't know, something up there.
That's the hill.
Oh, that's
part of the
helicopter. They're masking the sun.
It is so
It was
obvious.
Shot at the same place at the Warner Brothers as the establishing shot we just saw.
That's better. You don't see the reflection.
Yeah, they just use a helicopter in that one position.
No, you can see the reflection. Yeah, it's static.
Oh, he's not feeling well. Oh, he's hugging.
And he's going to die.
Come on. Auto-rotate.
Go behind the hill. Cue explosion. Okay,
oh, good Lord.
That was a mighty big explosion.
That was slightly cheesy, and somehow he managed to survive and inject himself with the experimental drug, which happened to work.
Well, he's suitably bloodied. Yeah. I'll take that.
I don't know.
That's
I'm not really
the
sure
jungle
how his clothes
set.
Exploded.
This is probably the jungle set on the back lot of Warner's.
Mm. Right. Ooh, that's some good blood coming out of his mouth. Oh, man.
It's
that's awesome.
get it in your skin there.
It's
buddy.
Like the worst syringe gag ever. Ooh, look, burning person hanging out.
So, and now, you know.
Back to present.
Back to present. Back to Zerbe's present. Well, Matthias and cleansing the world and everything. They looked, they were scared. They scared the crap out of me as a kid. I was just like, wow, these guys. All, scary. And I like their sunglasses.
I like the fact they're all wearing the same wig.
Yeah, well, their hair. And, of course, now they're using the medieval weapons to cleanse and blah, blah.
Right, right.
But, I mean, to be clear, I mean, what Neville, I mean, makes a point of is that they're all dying, is that they're all just slowly dying more slowly than the others did. A lot of people died quickly. They're dying much, much. And we find this out more later.
Now, this is an actor's dream. This is an actor's dream, what he has here.
He gets to act with hot dogs.
A handful of hot dogs.
Sausage links, even.
Solo. To be, it's only you.
Yeah.
And you are inhabiting an entire world, and it's all your monologues, and it's all you. Yeah. I mean, come on. If you're a ham, or if you like to, this is the role of a lifetime.
But there's not many actors who could pull this off. That's the whole thing.
To have their presence. And I love the fact that he chooses to dress up one night every week to have his dinner. This is what I think is totally untapped in everything that's tried to tackle this book, is the psychology of what would happen to one human being in this situation. His psychological health, what he sees, what he thinks.
I agree.
It's dramatically, completely overlooked and untapped.
And I think you and I have talked about this when we've seen this several times, but really if you look carefully, you know, and you're not listening to our commentary, but if you watch, he's kind of coming a little unhinged here. I mean, he's having a conversation with him. I think it comes up in a second. He says, excuse me.
I think the best thing that, you know, if a remake were to be done, would be Neville battling his own insanity.
Yeah,
look, trying to engulf him.
But I think it's part of it. It's subtly touched on, very, very subtly.
Lightly touched on, but again, not mined for what it truly could be.
Yeah.
What do you suppose they made that ball out of?
Flamey stuff.
Here it is. Wait. He's really trying to ignore it.
He's trying to deal with it.
He's trying to just play his pretend.
Focus.
Yeah.
I love the out-of-control eyebrow.
But it's great. It's just watching him. It's just masterclass. And it's like...
That does it.
Here, look.
But he doesn't still freak out. He says, excuse, under control.
He says, excuse me to Julius.
Which is nice, because this is his day-to-day life.
Right, and that's where it's like, he's saying, excuse me to...
He's trying to hold on to... His world, he's trying to hold on to his world, and it's being ripped from him.
And he has a sense, I mean, that's the thing, he's got to maintain a sense of humor. But then he's got the big, badass gun.
And this was huge when I first saw it, the infrared sight.
Oh, yeah.
That I was like, what the heck is this? Oh, that's awesome. You can see at night.
And not only that, it's an automatic. It's an automatic weapon.
Except he's just aiming at the...
It's not just like one shot. Yeah.
I love it that this guy fell down
and he was never aiming at him.
The crosshairs just stay in one place. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah. I like how he's got the other gun on
the seams, gentlemen. It's the seams.
That was
a
Browning automatic rifle. They're pretty powerful.
That's all right.
Nice move, Russ. I like that.
That's right. Right behind. And he just goes. And I like how they frame it. They frame it over the shoulder of Julius Caesar. And Julius Caesar is
just
the character.
Like
it's a two shot.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and he's trying, and he's just, I can't do this.
That's it. He had to share his problems. After this, L.A. had the earthquake, right? And he was in with Ava Gardner.
Oh, was it? Oh, that's right.
In 74. So.
Oh, that's a nice little
pull. I like that jacket and shirt combo.
Back. I like that scene. I mean, it was a nice scene. I mean, there was between what two characters there were.
And I feel really sorry for Neville, and I get it, and I understand his position, and I now am in it with him as a viewer. I think it's great.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, though, Matthias is talking about, you know, trying to sort of, at the very beginning of his speech, he's talking about how lonely he must be and how he's, you know, the last man. I mean, he says, touches on all those things that make you feel sympathetic for Charlton Heston.
Doesn't he say, I mean, we must pity him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Is this Dorothy Chandler? Pavilion? Where are we at?
No, I think this is Sun Life building downtown.
Mm.
talking to himself again.
Which is, you got to give it to him. He's allowed.
That's right.
In this situation.
That's right. I'm the last guy.
And truly, how else are you going to do it in writing? How are you going to convey as much to us that we need to know as an audience?
He can do his own personal log. Have his secretary write out the notes.
Dictation.
I love it that his lot in life is to clean out L.A. The onslaught. One man against a city and the world. I'm like,
but
awesome,
that's interesting.
Bring it on.
Actually, you've touched on a central thing, is that that's what he's adopted. That's not what he was about, but this is what it's turned into. He's turned into basically finding them and eliminating them because they are the problem. But why are they the problem? Because they want him dead? Is that why they're the problem? Or are they the problem because they should be eradicated because they're not human or what? What is it that's driving him?
Who's in the right?
What's driving him to eliminate them? Or is it a war?
Yeah. Dorothy Chandler's right here.
Okay.
I think so.
Nice. Nice use of echo. Old
There's
LA.
Still frames. Wow. They're all still frames. Yeah, except this. Brilliant. This is not still frame.
That's not. That's a nice shot with the mountains.
There's the city hall. Look at the mountains. Look how clear that is.
No, look at the smog down there. Look at the smog.
Nice.
I was looking at the snow.
I didn't see the buses. I saw the snow. This is the lot.
Rosalind. He's got a flashlight attachment on his Sten.
He's got the nice track suit.
Now, see, this is
beauty.
That's pretty flat lighting. That's fast production.
Well, that's the whole thing. All the indoor stuff is pretty flatly lit.
It's
his play.
Fast production.
Wouldn't that, yeah. Are you sure? Or was that just what fast. They were trying to convey?
It's a fast production. On a budget.
Yeah.
And Russ Meddy, he used shadow a good deal. It wasn't all flat in his stuff. High key.
There we go.
So I can tell it's a rush production when I see stuff like that.
I think that was the first. No, we saw some dead bodies at the beginning. So that's
in the car.
In the credits,
in the car shop, too, there was a guy sitting there.
Yeah. This is when he starts finding some people.
I'll go into the basement. That won't be dangerous.
No. The setup is always the best part of these films, whether it's I Am Legend or Omega Man. The setup, from the halfway point on, I sort of check out a bit.
Well, don't do that because you have all the good information.
Oh, okay. I always thought an interesting idea. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I think there's this spotty parts. There's parts that don't work and do work in this film throughout, as opposed to. I don't think this one falls apart in the last part. Half, do you think? I kind of like
I'm
it.
Less wow. into it than I am at the
Look
beginning.
At that crystal thing.
I'm into it more than I am with I Am Legend. I Am Legend lost me more than this does. And what loses me are the production values.
See, it's a lot of light. Where's that coming
from?
Awful
lot of light.
It's all stupid. Now, it's interesting they picked like old world architecture, unless those were the sets that were available, but I doubt. You know, I mean, clearly these were existing sets.
It makes it creepier, I think, to have a older world look with the cobwebs and then the deserted alone.
Or it's the whole thing of basically it was the old world and this is not the new world. Yeah,
boy,
he's always reminded everyone who died.
And the look on his face was kind of like they had it easy. Well, I mean, in their sleep.
I know. He's here, and there's. I mean, basically,
true. Good point.
He's surrounded by all these dead people. The world.
He
is
didn't
dead.
Have it easy at all. He's the one who made the decision to shoot himself up, and to survive. But does he wish that he had now?
And now he sees the freshly opened food.
Yeah.
Only problem with that is.
Oil doesn't evaporate anyway.
Well, don't eat the sardines.
Yeah.
That's the lesson in the apocalypse. Don't eat the sardines. Because the sardines will go bad. Because he knows someone's back there. I mean, in a way, he is the exterminator, you know?
I love that. The music, just awesome.
Yeah.
Little synthesizer action.
It works perfectly.
Freeze frame.
Freeze
frame.
Frame. Wow. Freeze frame. Blu-ray betrays everything. Wow.
Really does.
Oh, the actor's holding it together right there. Oh, either it was the sardines.
Freeze frame.
Oh. Wow.
Well, that's supposed to be. Hey, what's he saying?
I don't know. I've seen a lot of freeze frames and things where they just didn't have enough coverage, and so they just...
So why did the guy die? Was it the sardines, or did he just die?
It was the sardines.
There's no doubt it was the sardines.
I found another dead one.
No, I think he's just finding people...
Well, because the point is that they're dying, and that's his point, because part of the thing is he thinks he can... He knows that... He's told Matthias, you guys are dying. I can cure you. You know, he wants to try and find a cure. That's why he's caught some of them and tried to inject them and do whatever.
So he doesn't have to do laundry either. That's kind of cool.
That's true. Yeah, he just He doesn't have to get a new car.
He's living in a disposable world.
Completely disposable. Everything of all the
symbolic.
All the goods of the world are available to him to do whatever because there's no one left.
And nothing he can do.
And nothing has any meaning.
And nothing has any meaning.
Of course, the food has to maintain. That's kind of... Eventually, that's going to become a problem. He's got to have to grow his own food.
Not really. You think about how much canned food is stored in...
But canned food only lasts
Los
so
Angeles.
Long.
Yeah, canned food
is not...
It
is,
forever.
It is perishable.
No, but years.
Yeah, it'll last years.
It'll last a few years, but not too many years.
Mm, well, it might be a little warm in California for that.
You know what I thought would be an interesting take on this is if you go this whole movie, and then at the end you realize he's actually insane. And he's
and
like,
he's like
a homeless person walking the streets of L.A.
Funny.
And he thinks he's the last man on Earth the whole time.
Which sort
in
of relates.
That'd be kind of an interesting take.
You know? Like, psychologically, it's funny you should say that because having just watched American Psycho, we just did the thing for that mm-hmm. right before this, similar idea. Complete detachment, different world, doesn't exist.
Yes.
That is an interesting take.
What everyone else is seeing with their eyes is not what he's seeing in his world
right.
when you find out, when all is said and done, and he's just considered insane. And
so is he actually killing people in your take? I mean, is he...
Oh, you could do that, but I never thought of that, actually. No, but in his mind he thinks he is, but he's not actually killing people without... knowing it.
To clarify something that Duncan just said, yes, the secret is betrayed. We don't actually record just one every time. Ooh, he almost touched the mannequin. We do actually do, quite often, we do two at a time. So, just
Boy,
to clarify, anyone
really
had weird. Questions?
There's a real-looking mannequin. In
back
the
to the Omega
others.
Man.
Right. Oops.
Now,
just,
you're saying,
I just pulled back
in I Am Legend, they had a scene in the video store, you said, something with mannequins? What was that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Is this a takeoff on this scene here?
There was a scene that he had set up in the...
And she's looking
right.
What he's not going to notice. And he thinks he's kind of crazy.
Does it have anything to do with this scene, Duncan? As
not
an
really.
Homage or anything?
Okay. Kind of, but not really. Okay. Like, basically, Will Smith's character had set up a scene or scenario in everyday life kind of thing in a video store that was clean and had mannequins in different places. And he would, like, walk up and start talking to this one mannequin.
Now
who was,
I remember
like, just
that,
a random
yeah.
girl that was okay. in there. And the conversation he had was very,
Jump
very from the
guy.
Heart. Like, is just it showed him kind of cracking.
Yes, he just stepped over a dead body. Yes,
yeah. Stepped on his.
That's
got to
be
right?
the Warner Ranch. I mean the jungle set.
No.
So.
Yeah, I'll bet this is the jungle. That's the lagoon.
Oh, okay.
Yep, it is.
I bought it to be. You know, I bought it for a city park of some sort.
Which you see a lot of in L.A.
City parks? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And with phones in the middle. Right there. Just hanging out.
The ancient payphone.
I like just the way they drape the newspaper on the bench.
Because it wouldn't have blown away.
Just because, just to get, you know, let you know.
Mm-hmm. It's art direction, sir.
You know, it's in the apocalypse, there will always be...
There's the lagoon.
New pieces of newspaper draped over benches.
This is still intact. The lagoon back lot. Still looks pretty much like this.
See, now he really thinks he's losing it.
Yeah.
Because now he can't even believe what he just saw. Oh, he's always got a sense of humor. Oh, 8-track tapes. Yeah,
bonus.
Baby.
Yeah.
And he's wearing white.
Yeah,
and all
I love
right.
the semi-pirate shirt sort of thing he's got going on right now.
Yeah.
It goes with his, you know, the ruffled green velvet
totally
thing he
does.
Had last time.
Totally does.
I'd say bring it back.
Heck
it's kind
yeah.
of a new romantic.
Easier than a tie.
flavor. Okay. I don't know who's wandering around in here, but they're making a lot of noise.
Okay. Now,
right?
Now, here's the thing. How did they know? I mean, have they been following him and staking
yeah.
him out so they
is.
Knew that he was going to be well, here?
L.A. is a really small place. I mean, it's possible they just happen to be in the same place.
You know, there aren't that many people in the entertainment industry, yeah. so if you're in the same industry, then, you know, you can
so if you, so if you're mutant after the apocalypse like that, of course you're going to happen to be where Neville's going to be.
Excuse me, but I don't think he needs that candle.
I don't think he does either. Good heavens.
There's, like, ambient light coming from everywhere that's justified by nothing.
And that Love candle, it. What is going on there? It looks
that,
like a piece of bamboo.
That candle is a really powerful candle.
Oh, that was my spooky sound. Sorry.
I was wondering what that was.
And of course, now he needs the flashlight because that's going to make it better. I like the flare in the lens.
The lens, yeah.
Okay,
look at all that light it's putting
in the apocalypse. Never go never go into a wine cellar and stand beneath like a wine rack because the mutants will topple it over on you.
So that's number two on the list after don't eat the sardines.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Got to keep a running tab.
There's plenty of lessons. This is all about teaching you how to live through the apocalypse.
Also, use bigger padlocks.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't break through those, but that would be my recommendation.
That's just a little, you know,
see, I mean, come
common
on.
Sense safety tip.
Yeah, right.
If you hear something in the cellar and you've got bad guys after you,
uh-oh,
and then they're lurking behind the ladder and you don't see them, you know.
Ooh.
And then if you hear an organ.
Ah!
Whoa.
Right.
Ooh, that's a good stunt. I like that.
That was.
Hearing the organ, that's huge.
Yeah. Boy, they got him.
They got him good.
Sounds like they're popping corn.
Does he have the marks?
No, are the marks those herpes sores that they have all over their face?
No, the marks are essentially the skin and the eyes.
Oh.
Because he doesn't know about the eyes. This is where he finds out.
Mm.
It's interesting that they're using, of course, a court to try him by whatever laws they choose to...
I like the clay pedestals those candles are placed on.
Okay.
But they don't need the candles in this location either.
I want to know where they got the robes, because those are some really nice black robes.
Yeah.
And they're all slightly different.
And why don't, you know...
Oh, no, I guess
do they have do they have a tailor for the robes?
Right. Well, clearly they can make
that's
certain...
A good point.
It's like, why aren't they just wearing good their... weren't they wearing their everyday clothes? Why are they wearing... I mean,
well,
I guess the part is to change their clothing for...
Yes, to become the new...
Well,
I mean, yeah, I could buy that. I could buy that.
They clearly created their own society here with some kind of set of rules and
right.
So really, this group of people is like a stone's throw away from the group in Beneath the Planet of the Apes that worship the bomb.
Actually, yes. Same. Yeah.
No.
And which
she's
was
overdressed.
Actually was which was 1970, the year before. So there are a lot of films about the apocalypse back then. Okay,
but I'm just saying two Charlton Heston films that have the same basic element.
And so now here you have the private little conversation. He's making jokes and there was a jump cut there. I like that Matthias has just so thoroughly adopted this state of mind, and it's just so thoroughly worked out. Mm-hmm. I don't like him, but I admire that he's just got it all worked out. He's a new way of essentially leading the world.
Hmm.
Okay, I'm going to be picky about the lighting here because if they're so sensitive to lighting, they would not light this place so brightly.
That's what I've been saying.
No, that one right over his shoulder looks like a Jawa. Did you see that?
The eyes?
Glowy eyes.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. Or like Phantasm.
Yeah. We need the silver ball to be flying in the background.
Ooh.
I can see why Anthony Zerbe needs the sunglasses, though. Inside, it's a lot of light they threw on him.
Mm-hmm. See, he says there's no cure. He doesn't want to hear about it.
Mm. That's what I think is really great, you know, about what could be done in the screenplay is seeing the points of view of these two people.
Absolutely.
And there's no black and white, but it becomes shades of gray of what each perceives as
good
reality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In this
horribly
fist huge situation that they're in.
Oh, those are the those are the sunglasses.
Okay,
that's the reflection
is
of the candles.
Overdressed.
Yeah. I love the sparkly.
Yeah, it's way over the top.
Well, you're right. They do have all sorts of different capes, and likely what they did is they went all through the city and found whatever capes there were, and these were the types, and they were different types
or different kinds of material. I mean, I don't know if you could have found that many.
Wow,
right, but the implication is like you're
Liberace.
Right.
Liberace.
No one has the same
say,
kind of capes.
Liberace. It was right on the tip of my tongue.
You know, Anthony Zerbe's looking pretty heavy there.
Of course, who are we to talk?
See, he's making up all sorts of crimes, whatever. Everything about modern life. I mean, really, they're very much Luddites. And he says, oh, Mark says he doesn't even know. Nice shot.
Ooh, there's
nice.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's
cameras
a cameraman?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Now, of course, this freaked out just like in...
Now, see, too much light. They should have dropped the light and lit their eyes.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate.
I mean, I bought it, but...
I mean, the concept is good, just the execution is lacking. It could have been much creepier,
right,
lighting-wise.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, they didn't really have a style like that yet.
No, I mean, but I got to tell you, that even just the way they did there was creepy enough. I'm still kind of creeped.
But it could have been really impactful.
So, Jim, are those full contacts? Or, I mean, what is that?
No, it's just it's a contact. I don't think it goes beyond the iris. They probably can't see through them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you notice his, in the close-up, they're crooked, which is creepier, but kind of tells you that they're not ones you can necessarily see through.
So that was pretty risky at this time, 1971. Everyone who's wearing these contacts, I mean, that wasn't a...
Well, they had contacts. They were hard contacts. But in the 70s, they did have contacts.
Right, but with this... designed to be what's the word, opaque, where you don't see, did it, compared to now, was this a pretty ground floor of doing that kind of contact, or it could have caused problems optically for their eyes?
You know, I doubt they had them in that much. I mean, they were just in probably for a few minutes. I'm sure they weren't comfortable.
And the sunglasses help so that they don't have to have them in all the time, right?
Yeah.
Now, this is my single favorite track of the score.
And
I like how he helps himself.
Called On the Tumbrel. It's an excellent piece.
And I just think it's interesting they have the dunce cap on him. I mean, they're really treating this like a medieval medieval
it's
burning.
Cool. Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, I think it also tapped into lots of fears about encroaching technology.
And also, don't you think, I mean, it would be a shame if either one of them were removed from this situation. One exists because of the other. I mean, Neville and the family. If the family were to disappear, Neville wouldn't have any, except for the cash girl coming in, but he wouldn't have any occupation or focus. His drive was to clean this town out of these people, and this guy, and their focus is Neville. I mean, to occupy them in this loneliness.
Well, actually, no. His goal is to, I mean, obviously fight them, the enemy, but is also to cure them. That's what he said. He knows there's a way. He's trying to figure out
Matthias
how to cure them.
Matthias insists there is not.
But it's like Batman and Joker. You know, they both need each other.
He doesn't want a cure.
Well, he doesn't because this is a new world, and he's powerful in it, and he can, you know, exactly. And it's in his interest to basically destroy the old world to maintain order, and with him at the top of the order. And this is the L.A. Coliseum, I believe.
Or is it the Hollywood Bowl?
No,
no,
LA
it's not
Coliseum.
The Hollywood Bowl, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's where they burn the dead. Mm. So it's symbolic.
And look at the electronics. They've piled up electronics behind
and
him.
They,
that's cool.
But it's
like
interesting
that
basically they call him, he's the last of the dead. You know, they're saying that his world is dead.
Mm.
And now, of course, they want to great.
You know, like a lot of
and the older I get, the more I appreciate that.
Whoa, hello.
Yes,
what were you saying, Duncan?
Like a lot of apocalyptic films, this all happens in a finite, you know, geographical area, and I have to wonder what's the rest of the nation or the world like. Is this just a little microcosm? Could this area be isolated by a fence that's, you know, 1,000 miles long that just cuts off a portion of what used to be the U.S. and everywhere else is okay, and they just leave it alone. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities.
That's interesting.
I think the implication is that, you know, all of civilized society is basically
gone.
Sure, that's the implication, but they
never
say it flat out.
It could be the village of just a certain quadrant.
And maybe he doesn't. Maybe Heston doesn't.
That's
know
neat.
That.
I never thought about that.
I kind of think of it more as like The Stand, where, you know, basically a huge, like 99% of the population of the world died, and then you have what's left.
But that would have been a great surprise. I mean, you don't want to assume by so. But this one piece of music has more themes in it than any other in the score, and they're all wonderful. It's just great stuff.
That actor actually who got him out of there, his name's Paul Coslow, and actually I think he's on some of the. He's on like the preview or review or something like that on the DVD. And there's Rosalind Cash. I like her.
Now, what else has she
she's
done?
Playing,
that's
she's playing
note?
Pam Grier, which she's doing. Yeah. She's playing Coffee.
What else, film-wise?
Okay, there we had symbolism. I'll Crucify You.
Mm-hmm.
Did she burn out pretty quick in the 70s?
No,
she
worked.
Did she,
she passed away, I think, sometime in the 80s.
Ooh.
My name's Mon.
Sometime in the 80s. She must have been very young.
She was young. She was young.
Oh, I remember this actor.
Uh, don't know if he did that much after this. He may have done some stuff, but I loved him. In this film, he's great. He's highly entertaining.
Can't run too far in this vinyl outfit.
That's right.
She kind of has a Michael Jackson-y thing about her.
She is a pale. She's pale skinned. Yes, she is. He's very nonchalant. I like he's very nonchalant. It's like, okay.
Yeah, nothing ruffles his feathers.
Yeah. Ooh. And, of course, they're going to keep their heads down because
that's not
it's
him.
Not them.
It's not them.
It's not them at all. Still not them. Yeah,
don't let him get away.
I think this sequence was. I mean, they did their best. Ooh, that looked. The lighting was good. Oh my god!
Oh my gosh!
On fire!
He's wow! It's incendiaries. Like,
I guess we can't go this way. Oh, we can drive. He can ride a motorcycle at least a little.
The idea is wonderful, but again, the budgetary limitations are.
Yeah, made it a little tough. Yeah,
and that's definitely not Charlton Heston.
No. That maybe
it's,
was.
It's not seamless. Now, is this where he says, hitch up your drawers?
Yeah, this is, it's coming up. And, whoa.
I think that's.
Ah!
Is that the Joe Canut?
Oh, no doubt. And he's trying to hide his face.
Or what's his name?
Yeah, Joe Canut.
Joe Canut, okay.
And this, ooh.
Great music.
The music rocks. The music is awesome.
Music's awesome.
This would be a great ride at like Universal Studios Hollywood.
The Omega okay, ride.
Yeah, here comes. Here comes.
Yeah, I'd go to Charlton.
Yeah. Hitch up your drawers. There you
Hitch
go.
Hitch up your drawers.
And then we have, of course, the stunt.
Strobe.
Where they go over the car, and then and they're down the street because
nice. And somehow Dutch gets away too.
Yeah, he had his bike, whatever. So
Dutch can actually teleport. They don't really get into that here.
I think this is up in the hills.
Yes.
It looks like Malibu Canyon.
I'm trying to think of what.
Oh
where,
no!
Was
this,
I looking at?
This I think might be the hills up in Burbank.
Yeah,
like
it's somewhere there.
Approaching that restaurant, Castaway.
That's terrible.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that was not Charlton Heston.
Yeah, that was terrible. Now, for me, from here on out, I
like the kid with the submachine gun.
No, that's a full machine.
That's
gun,
full machine.
That's
okay.
A full size, like stand mounted machine gun.
I didn't mind this. I mean, I know it kind of changes the whole pace of it.
Two different movies to me. From here on out, I'm sort of like a little more detached than I am at the front of this film.
Right.
Apparently these kids don't clean themselves now.
Yeah, well, it's the apocalypse, man.
Well,
look at the context.
The oldest girl, she was like,
I guess,
fine, but the rest were like playing in the dirt earlier or something.
Right. Not like the idea that the kids, I mean, of course, I didn't like the whole idea, oh, it's got kids in it, but the idea that the kids essentially were more immune than the adults is interesting.
It's our future, the children.
Good Lord.
Oh, no.
Hello, dirty little street urchin.
Hello.
No, it's... It's the
girl
man.
From the Les Mis Roadshow Company.
It's the man who kills everyone. See, here you go.
Oh, there he is.
There's Dutch. On his, is that a Harley?
Ooh, geez.
Oh, okay. That's a hog. That's nice. What is he?
See, this could have been.
I like his pistol.
He's got a
Look
Thompson
at that
submachine gun strapped on the back there.
And he's got a nice pistol.
Oh yeah, he's got like some. Colt single action pistols there. Some cowboy stuff.
I like that he explains who he was. He was basically a PhD student. Mm-hmm. And I like, I love his explanation. As med school senior. I like how you said that. That was a med school senior before they scratched the world.
Right. It's like they were going to do the world, but they scratched that.
Well, idea. That's the whole thing. I mean, the whole fear that, you know, everyone would be stupid and basically destroy the world. Mm-hmm. Tertiary cases. I love his jacket. His jacket's awesome. Okay, now we're on the lot. And great, now we get a nice recitation of what, you know, all the symptoms that,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. We're going to hear another, you know, a view where he's getting to learn and essentially grow because he hasn't been able to grow in 2 years, essentially, as a character. Mm-hmm.
Why is she lighting a candle?
Because it
makes her happy.
It's for it's, Richie.
Oh, she's going in Richie. Oh, thank you. Because she doesn't need it out there.
Right. Because his room is not flatly lit.
Okay. Good. Let's go to his room.
Right. P.S. Pepsi Cola product placement on the table over there.
Mm.
They got a nice little Coleman lantern action going on too.
Once again, he describes him as an exterminator. Mm. I mean, he does say it's complicated because basically he's a doctor who saves lives and now he's killing people.
Mm-hmm. You know what, though? You couldn't really live at the top of any building that took an elevator to get to because right. all of that depends on city power, you know?
Yeah.
Generators would still have to be running. Yeah. He runs everything on his own little tiny generator.
And then he could be trapped. Exactly. I mean, he's better off being right. in a two-level.
What's interesting right. is he has an elevator in his little
Yeah, but it's like story. A one-story thing, right?
Right, and it is generated by him, yeah. Powered by him. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, it's a little... Less flat.
Here, let me get this candle over near you because I can't see in the...
Yeah, see, that's just...
Trying to see his reaction.
Again, fast production.
Yeah.
I like how she...
No wonder he was fast.
I mean, I like the
idea. Yeah, he didn't light it as well as his other stuff.
I mean, I like the idea.
Oh, look, the lens slipped. Did
yeah.
you see that?
Yeah,
the
I did.
The lens slipped okay. when he pulled his eye open. That's awesome.
I will accept it.
It would have been creepy, though, in the theater. It's like his eyeball slipped.
So but. Now he's never seen a case like this where someone is just turning so to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And apparently when they turn, they just turn psycho.
It's a great
What's
setup.
What's going on with that brick next to him?
But I like how he's explaining, you know, 1 second he sets it up for later.
What are you seeing with the brick, Jim?
Look at the mortar lines.
Oh.
Oh.
They don't match the bricks.
What is
it?
It's double.
That's like a double exposure.
Oh, that's what it is. No, it's a split diopter lens.
Oh, and that's our seam line.
Oh, sure enough.
Wow.
Good call, dude.
That's
that was
a nice call.
That's excellent. Eyeballing.
They tried to get it right online. But anyway, he just explained, basically did the setup that, you know, 1 second the guy's face, you know, skin was turning pale, and then mm-hmm. the next he completely turned and tried to kill them, and they had to kill him, which is the setup later for Rosalind Cash.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which really the creepiest thing about this, when you watch Last Man on Earth, Vincent Price, when someone dear to him is the woman, and she starts changing, it's the best setup to creep the audience out of someone you love and trust, and when they're actually being taken over by this virus mm-hmm. and changing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Another diopter.
Oh,
right?
That's right. Another diopter right there.
Oh, nice.
And now they're like, whoa. Which they didn't know. Right, sorry, because none of them are immune. They know they're just slowly progressing through it.
That's not Ron Howard. Looks like Ron Howard.
Ron Howard was too older then. See, it's the second reference. He said, "Christ, you could save the world." Because before she said, you know, the whole thing about being crucified.
And then not so subtle ending.
That's right.
Again, that was Charlton Heston's.
Oh, it's on this is the 210. They closed down the 210? Or they were just building the 210? Who knows?
Hmm.
Now we're getting all the religious references. Okay, see, here we go. This is brutal. This scene.
Mm-hmm.
See, he caught one. He was experimenting. And this is where it's similar to I Am Legend. You know, he mm-hmm. caught them and he experimented on them.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, similar but different. He's a little bit more sophisticated about it in I Am Legend, with the whole traps and tranks and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, also, but the mute, I mean, there the mutants are depicted as being definitely changed physically. With, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a whole thing.
I think the difference in this and I Am Legend isn't so much the physical difference, it's the psychological difference. Because in I Am Legend, they're barely have any sort of indication of intelligence.
Right.
It's very, animalistic, instinctive behavior.
Which yes. I think, yeah. Sort of takes it one further step away from the message that I think it was actually supposed to have.
Exactly. Like, I guess if I'm picking it up right, in the ideal translation.
Apparently the camera moved from the last time you turned it on.
Apparently. I like that. I'm a narcissist.
In the ideal one, they would have something like the creatures in I Am Legend and then something like these. Both.
Ooh,
right?
I like
how
the backlit.
He would have taken out all the animalistic ones and
right.
killing these, also not realizing that they were right. Am I right?
But that's the point. That's the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was in the book. He was just at night. Essentially, he'd go at night and he'd stake the vampires. Only he didn't mm-hmm. know he was staking actual people who were ones who weren't completely
So
zombie-like.
He would catch them essentially asleep.
Yeah. That's why.
That's why he couldn't really tell the difference.
He's literally finding their nests. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And here she's saying that he's a killer. Oh, no, that's the family killer thing. The boogeyman.
Yes, honey.
Basically, yes.
Yes, it is.
That's exactly right.
You're missing some details, but essentially, for sure, yeah.
You're very smart.
And if you're not good, they're going to do the same to you.
She just asked him, are you God? Okay, are we getting... Now we're getting really...
promoting.
I like it. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
Referencing I Am Legend again,
mm-hmm.
I really liked when he found the one nest, like earlier on in the film.
Yeah.
When he found where they were all standing up to sleep, kind of in a semi in a circle, bobbing.
And
so freaking creepy.
And he says, yeah.
That's, it was in a dark room. Yeah, exactly. He's looking for the dog.
The whole setup part, exactly. Yeah.
What you said.
With those kind of
like,
things were really interesting.
Was really, really good, and then when it tried to get past,
I think
that
it always has
it
problems in the later acts. But the setting is awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, but I like this part. Where they're trying to, this is what's nice about this setup is there's more people for him to interact with,
mm-hmm.
and he gets to actually be more of a
mm-hmm.
exercise the savior aspect of mm-hmm. his doctorly thing. What
I agree,
fulfill his mission, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
didn't that kid go on to do Welcome Back, Cotter?
No, he did Room 222.
Oh, Room 222.
Yes. Yeah, you got to look up Room 222 on IMDb.
Yeah.
It was a show in the early 70s. It was a comedy about a high school.
Was it a comedy?
Yeah, what kind of comedy series? It had Michael Constantine. And
who wrote
had,
the theme song?
Damn it, Jerry Goldsmith.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, you guys. Wow.
Well, that's the only reason Tim asked me, because I'd guess that.
Oh, she's got a fancy outfit on. How
this actually, this scene coming up actually is a really good scene too. They do really well with this.
What is going on?
Oh, she found a man.
And it's been a while.
And she's in her. Is that dashiki?
Dashiki.
That's the.
Remember dashiki?
She's in her comes off easy clothes. Is what it is. So, it doesn't matter what you call it.
Oh, he's still playing. Nope.
I'll say.
She's
like, I'm
I just
on
made
it.
My
I'm
move.
On it. Yeah.
Oh, dig the old stereo, man.
Yeah.
That stereo is something else. And he's got the nuts out and the wax fruit.
Well, not yet. I'm sorry.
Whoa!
Zoink!
He dressed up. He changed.
That's right. He's got his.
Let me clean myself up for you, baby.
And the brandy snifter. Okay, see, now we don't have the fires in the background. It looks much better.
Yes, it does. But she's on fire.
Hustled it.
The house fuzz was on vacation.
See?
That is a low contrast.
They always ruin the mood for him.
Exactly. They do.
They're blocking him.
They are...
Blocking him.
They're
are
way
we allowed
blocking
to say
him.
That? I guess not.
Yeah, we've said worse. I think this is a nice... evolution from where it was early in the film, and now he's sharing. I mean, he's getting to share his experience. She's saying she experiences the same thing as him. And then we get to find out more that basically her and Richie were with them.
Now, why would he not know about this?
Maybe isolated. He didn't know anyone. He didn't know anyone
know
was
her
around.
Backstory.
He's talking about Matthias.
But
he's been to walk the streets. Why would he not know that he used to walk the streets ringing the bell?
Well, maybe he did know about the walking the streets, but he never saw anyone else. And he's been isolated in this part of town and gone out during the day when he hasn't seen any of these other people, which obviously the implication is that there's maybe 10 people in all of Los Angeles that are left.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Here it is. Here's one of the messages. Because having different skin and eyes will get you in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also the idea is that, you know, the world had changed, but then they were reminders of what the old world was, and they didn't want...
Sure.
the Census Bureau.
Whoa.
Oh, those teeth.
He's got very horse teeth, I gotta say, or at least in his later years.
I don't think, you know, well, watch Ben Hur, buddy.
Oh.
I mean, he still has his flyaway eyebrow hair. It's like the makeup crew was not doing anything, which is kind of interesting. I mean, they didn't, you know, the teeth aren't whitened, the brows aren't groomed. Hers either.
Oh.
He would have been cast well as Gandalf if they had done The Lord of the Rings like 2 decades earlier.
We're going to get our interracial kiss
comes.
In 1971. Oh,
nope.
Foiled.
Psych.
Foiled. And then Ron Grenier's music. You know, that's what happens. The chicks,
and that's the way it should
the
have
chicks
been lit the whole
make
time.
You forget to put the gas in the generator.
Women are nothing but trouble.
Man.
Whether you're in a post-apocalyptic film.
This
or real
is
life?
Rule number three.
Oh.
Rule number three.
Bitches, man. I had to say it. I'm sorry.
That's not rule number three. Keep your generator fueled.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yes. And then.
That's not code, is it? Is that a euphemism?
No, there's.
A eusterism.
Well, his generator was fueled, but the generator for his place wasn't.
His generator was fueled. And
his personal generator was.
Took out his spark plug.
I can't take you guys anywhere.
Fortunately, you didn't.
You know what gets me
they
is
came
like,
to you.
If it was that important, he'd have had some kind of alarm set or thank something.
Thank you. Thank you. Know? I think it's more of a plot hole than anything else.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way. Yeah. Or they just sort of thought the audience wouldn't really think through it that hard.
And you can hear in the music the water chime.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they ditched the sunglasses.
You know what a water chime is, don't you,
Jim? I'm
sorry? A water chime, the sound where it decays in pitch, you hear it in the background music, is an actual like wind chime. Hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And you hit it while you're immersing it in water.
Yeah.
Wow.
At the same time.
And you're moving
it. Bends
and
the
you're,
note.
You're moving. Now, you see, now Brother Zachary is being bad. He brought
a
gun away.
He's using machinery.
He's using machinery. And you know what happens to Brother Zachary when he uses machinery? He dies. He's not, you know, following the way.
Clearly, the family has the right idea.
That is a really well-lit shaft. And that is not
that's
another
what she
euphemism.
Said.
What movie are you watching?
Oh, it just degenerates.
Everything goes blue. Yeah, here, let me
now,
attach it
now,
to
okay,
the
now, here's another thing. Wouldn't he think of like something that would keep them from using a grappling hook to get up? But I guess he figures the lights would keep everyone away. Now, see, this is the problem of having three padlocks. He has to unlock all of them. Oh, he did that quickly. Okay.
Real fast.
He's super fast. He's Charlton Heston.
Okay. Why would you even bother looking? It's like, I didn't feel it. I better look down in there.
To make sure.
And I will say that Dan Wallen, he's the recording engineer of the music score.
How is he getting around the wire?
Yeah, Dan Wallen.
Sorry.
It stands up beautifully because he did close miking on the instruments, and
Which means what? Oh, as
means that as far as like a reverb hall sound or something, right, when the mics are far away, mm-hmm, he did a close miking, and the score, because it's a small ensemble of musicians due to the budget, it's not a large orchestra.
Right.
And with the close miking, what he was able to do in the mix, it has so much more presence, and the score kicks ass actually because of that.
How many pieces do you think there are in this orchestra?
I would say
40?
At the most.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what I find interesting? Well, I don't find it interesting, but actually when Rosalind Cash is in there, I wish they had found something more
interesting for
expressive
her to do,
as opposed to just standing around.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And fortunately, that barbed wire did not slow him down a bit.
That barbed wire, he needed razor wire.
I think
wire,
his
is what it was.
Robe must be like Teflon coated.
That's what it was. That's why they picked them.
Yeah,
so.
No doubt.
The Liberace robe is right. Teflon coated.
And
so it's fashionable
with
and practical.
Yes.
Ooh, there we go. No, not the light. Ooh.
Doesn't seem to be hurting him that much.
Yeah.
And he's got the gun. Bad, Zachary. Bad. I remember when I saw this for the first time, of course, you know what you're thinking. For some reason, it's like, well, because we've all seen this. We know that Charlton Heston comes out of there and he points the gun at her and you think he's going to shoot her. It's like, what?
Of course, she moved, which was a mistake.
Well,
she should be standing still in front of that double door.
So he comes out, so she's ready to shoot him, and he's like, I'm okay. And she's like, I'm okay. But then he pulls out his gun. Ooh.
Nice stunt.
Yes. Okay, that's gross.
And he's twitching. That's great.
That was good. Though I don't like the... Yeah, I don't know. It was a bit of fake out. I remember when I was young, I was like, oh, no, is that going to happen? I don't know. That's what they talked about in the early 70s.
Misdirection.
It was misdirection.
You mean the part where
red herring.
Where he almost shot her. Well, where she thought he was going
to
shoot her.
He's looking behind her.
Well, but
we
didn't know.
But I think that's actually a good direction because it puts you off. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a different interpretation to something that could have been just matter of fact.
Are they going to kiss? Yes.
Oh, there it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
1971.
Actually, I mean, whoa.
And there's our 70s
music. You were saying this was a very controversial kiss.
Well,
it's not much, just many look, parts of the country in 1970. Yeah, for Charlton Heston. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. If she doesn't say it's like riding a bike. Oh, well, there you go.
Well, that was a missed opportunity.
That would have been way too easy. Oh, there we get
what
our...
What in the world?
We have a little bit of nudity.
A little flash.
70s filmmaking.
Yeah, baby.
On a little
push
side.
The envelope.
And there we go.
I don't remember that.
I remember that.
I'm now, remembering it.
Now, the interesting thing is, now we just got a hint. Oh, nice statue, by the way, on the left there. The little hint is that basically she closed the shades. She closed the shades, and she's her eyes are, she's in dark because she's starting to get sensitive.
Mm. Oh.
Oh, yeah. Now she's starting to get sensitive. It's not, I mean, also it kind of hides the fact, so she doesn't have to stand up. We don't have to see her too naked. But yeah.
Bakhtin.
I remember that stuff. Colgate, yeah.
And I like the sundry. I like that fake cobwebby stuff.
Everywhere.
Sundries. I like that.
Is she wearing sunglasses?
It's like this
okay. All right.
Glue material that's in like this spinning fan that make the cobwebs.
Planned Parenthood supplies.
Flintstone vitamins down there on the bottom.
Shower to shower. Oh my God. Here we go. That's some dark apocalyptic humor there. Birth control pills. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Of course, ignoring that birth control pills can be used to regulate a woman's cycle and ease her cramping.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Ignoring that, yes.
I'm yes. I'm here for you,
that
ladies.
Bit of trivia.
Yes, Jim. Thank you, Dr.
We are
Jim.
Actually, ignoring that part.
Yeah, we are ignoring that part. Because the idea,
I thought we'd get away with
it. Because I think the point in the apocalypse is to repopulate, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, but come on, at the cost of a more painful period.
Public service announcement
Motrin?
By Jim Usterman.
Motrin? I don't know. Wow. So now we get to see this scene, you know, just a lot of...
That is the mill at Warner Brothers.
Likely.
This area right here.
And these are all people now, who worked in it.
And No, but... I mean, once again, they're walking in a dead world. I mean, these are all dead bodies. I mean, they're walking through all this, you know, and it's not like they clean anything up, but they're just walking through the remnants.
And let's think about
the remnants of a world.
This is the mill right here. Okay. I recognize that stairwell. Anyway, this production value could have really done it up with all the dead bodies that would have been cadavers, skeletons, yeah, scattered through a huge city like Los
Angeles.
Right,
but all they had to do was suggest it here and there, and they did
it
somewhat. But yeah,
on
it could
a better
worse
budget, you, yeah, could really do it right and make it as gross, mm-hmm, as it,
well,
should be.
Well, typically, actually, the highway should have been jammed with cars.
Well, right. Imagine the stink.
Well, I think the stink would have been gone
and
by
disease
now.
And the disease.
Well,
yeah.
And if you remember the last scene, they had a conversation where they talked about... how the family was going around gathering dead bodies
and burning
them.
Burning them.
But that's a lot of bodies.
Well,
it would take them a while.
They could only really do like an area.
Yes. In fact, we could probably guess how many bodies that is.
Yeah.
Knowing the population of the city.
It's a lot of work. But, you know, to do the screenplay right, that would be a fundamental element you'd have to do.
So now we're going through the whole...
Wait, speaking in German.
Good night. Sorry, that guy.
We're losing Jim, ladies and gentlemen. He's going away. Are you feeling more sensitive to light, Jim?
I am, and I'm cramping.
Oh, great. Well, if you change, we're going to have to put you down. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Come on, put it in Charlton Heston's car.
I love the whole thing that it's his blood that is, you know, the saving...
This is where he goes. And then he goes.
No,
but, what the hell?
But no, man. As a story point, yes. And then also, mm-hmm, obviously, the symbolic level, mm-hmm, of, you know, the blood of him, okay, the blood of, I mean, essentially the blood of Jesus in a way. I mean, that, yeah, they keep on referring to that.
It is the Christ symbolism all through this movie.
There's
a lot of Christ,
especially his demise. If that doesn't cinch it up, I don't know what does.
But also, when they had him ready to burn, they had him essentially in a, you know, with his arms spread out.
Well, exactly. The people that are killing the very thing that is their savior. That's exactly
what
the Christ symbolism right there.
Right, exactly.
At the end of this movie.
Oh, you know what?
Holy moly.
Me being the non-Christian, I didn't even realize
they
that.
They're killing, mm-hmm, the very thing that is sent there to save them.
Right. The whole thing about Christ was that...
That's why
they were expecting one thing, and they got another, and they didn't realize that he was the one that's supposed to save them, so they thought he was... You know, the thing that they had to attack the most.
Ew. Interesting.
Look at that.
It's not too subtle at all.
However, despite the fact that they killed him, he still saved him, which is kind of the implication, too, at the end of this, where they get away with
his
serum
blood,
even though he died.
See, that's why I don't mind what I call the Omega People. I always wanted there to be a sequel to be called the Omega People, and we see what happens to them when they go off.
Revenge of the Children of the Omega People.
Well, you know, that's
no
interesting.
Revenge.
I Am Legend actually showed them arriving at some kind of compound that looked like a normal city with people in it and stuff like that.
I didn't like that at all.
Why?
I just didn't. It was just like, nah, that's wrong. It's got to begin and end with Neville.
I want to see the sequel to that, where the people in the city go back.
He just said, where did you ever see a stream full of fish in Harlem? Buddy, that is racist. I'm sorry.
Or culturalist, maybe.
And also, they're in L.A. Why would it have to be... Well, it is more culturalist than this. Like, come on. She could see fish. Ooh, Richie. Richie's coming back. He's actually a director now. He's directed big TV. Well, I don't want a big TV. He's done a lot of TV directing.
Really?
Eric Lanouville, yeah. Oh, we're in the last act now. Now is the plan to get out of town.
Everything looks so hopeful.
Everything looks
it's going to be all right, Serge. Everything's going to work out.
And you know, here's the lesson. Number four, when you're getting ready to go out of town, no one split up. Don't go out and do this or do that. Everyone sticks together.
That's right.
Because when you don't, everything gets fucked up.
I love this device. It's great. She covers up now so she can have a reveal later.
Oh, it's great. And she puts on the sunglasses. Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. And Ron Grenier's score kicks in, man. It's awesome.
Oh, can I borrow your... I like that she leaves with her machine gun, and can I borrow your credit cards?
All right. She picks up her purse and
the
machine
gun. That's right, because that's important. Okay, so here we see lots of cars just basically with dead bodies in them. There was one before. And then I think we get a shot over. Yep, there we go.
Just to nice, good. They're
absolutely
presenting it more.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, you're reminded that basically they're wandering in a world full of the dead. I mean, truly dead, not metaphoric in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's taken him a while to do this because he wouldn't be doing that again too soon.
Right.
It takes you 8 weeks to replenish. Still got a mark from my last one 3 days ago. I give blood all the time.
Actually, no. I think you can give blood more often than 8 weeks.
Whole blood, 8 weeks is how much they... I mean, like, maybe medically it's possible,
right.
But they don't let
recommended
you do it
any wise.
More frequently than 8 weeks.
I think that has to do with other things.
What about
I don't think it has to do with replacing your blood supply.
Well, yeah.
I think it has to do with other things. I think it has to do with testing the blood. I found out about this at one point. Yeah. Obviously you can't do it every day, but I think the 8 weeks has to do with testing blood. Hmm. That has to do with replenishing.
Like for them to test it to make sure you're still okay and not block you or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, because they test everything in there, yeah. Well, what they test for, yeah. Yep. Uh-oh. See, now you're putting ideas... Okay, next rule. Don't put ideas in impressionable young people who think they need to do something when they don't. In an apocalypse.
Because that'll happen.
Because that's exactly what happened. See? This is proof. Positive.
Nice strings.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful.
Nice run right through there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a nice wine and liquor
story. It was very eclectic, Ron Grenier's choice of instrumentation and themes to this film. They're incongruous. And
nuts.
Just very interesting choices.
Freeze frame. Oh, no. He did this awesome job.
Meanwhile, on stage 15.
Yeah. Look at those machine guns that he's got set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are 50 cal machine guns.
Oh,
heavy machine guns.
See, and he says, you know, if I knew where they were at, and now he knows. He's always wondered where they were, and he said he'd kill them. And Richie just gives it up. And this is the knowledge he's been seeking. And very subtle there, Mr. Hessen, holding the gun during this. Yep,
he does have interesting sleeves on his shirt.
That's a way to use a prop for a moment, like he did there.
Yeah,
I'm rejecting the gun. You're hostile. Oh, now and of course he says, you know, that he doesn't fit in, he doesn't belong. So that's interesting. Well, because the whole thing, also at this time in, you know, early 70s, the whole thing with the generation gap, and I think definitely it was the whole thing of changing attitudes and, you know, especially you saw it with music especially, but just in terms of generational attitudes about things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this kind of hint, you know, played with that idea, that notion too, that, you know, essentially someone Charlton Heston's age would have been of an older mentality, though obviously he's shown that he's younger thinking with Woodstock and all that kind of thing. I don't know. He does a great job in this film, Paul Coslow. I really like his performance. It's very joyful, cheery, it's just spontaneous. It's got a big spark to it. Oh, trouble. Here it is. I hate that material on that chair, by the way.
It's awful.
Oh, man, no.
Then don't come over to my house because I have a whole couch in that.
Okay.
Dear old white guy.
Dear, I am going to take the world by the horns. Going to do what I want. See? He wants to get away from it all, too. See? Whoa.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey. Nude shots. I forgot that they had this in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she was very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And not shy.
Is this a different version or is this the original version?
No, it's the original version.
Okay.
Yeah, they, not the well, they didn't director's
show,
cut.
Well, they didn't show this version on TV, obviously. They cut a few things out like that.
Oh, fortunately, sure. He found that note very
and
quickly.
Then he finds, I like how he's just like, look how he plays it. It's like, everything's okay, okay. It's like, oh my God.
Zoom-a-rama.
Oh, it's a Zoom. All right, I'll buy it. I hate Zoom.
This is New York Street.
I hate Zoom.
Warner
but
Brothers.
I'll buy it. Yep.
I think at that point, if I were Charlton Heston, I wouldn't be trying to go after the kid. I'd just be like, all right, we have a limited time. Let's get the hell out.
Really? Just cut and run?
Well, he can't. What's he going to do?
He,
but he can't.
There's
leave,
an army of them.
But he can't leave right now. It's dark, so they'd have to wait till the next day anyway.
True.
So he's going to break his rule and go
except
out.
Except that the kid is acting as a diversion.
But Richie is what's-her-face's brother. I mean, he can't leave Richie behind.
Oh, yeah. She won't. He won't get to see any more of that naked girl.
Well, I suppose, you know, when
you mean his sister?
This looks like the set from Prince of Darkness.
The last one in the world, then.
You know?
What was that?
From what?
This looks like the set from Prince of Darkness.
No, I forget that.
Prince of Darkness. Oh my God, Justice!
Ooh, that's right, with the sword. Justice. Well, that's the irony, is that they basically hold themselves up in the Halls of Justice. And
right.
The old court building.
That kid's got funky teeth.
Now, wait a minute. Why didn't Charlton Heston figure that out before? They took him there. Remember? They had him in the old court building, and they did the trial. So, obviously, they were probably there. Why didn't he go there?
It had to be some kind of court something if he didn't really thought about it.
Yeah, he didn't think.
I like his jumpsuit.
I know. That jumpsuit's awesome.
Is that nylon?
I want to go.
No, it's probably an asbestos jumpsuit.
I want to go a Halloween one time in that jumpsuit.
I want to go
to the Omega Man. Who are you? I'm the Omega Man. And you see, now Richie's saying exactly the wrong thing. Oh, Richie. You don't want to say things like that. I like how they shoot him, Richie. You know, you can definitely feel the menace. Oh, he's a lunatic. And he won't listen to anything that counters what he thinks.
Richie, you messed everything up. They're going to have a rumble tonight.
Cue musical number.
Tonight.
It's really scary because the way they shot Richie, they shot him from real low because, you know, he's short, and so he's definitely overpowered.
First shot where she looks a little pale.
She looks kind of fair.
This is a great tracking shot on her. She sees her true people now, her true destiny.
Well, and the interesting thing, hang on, we come to the bag of groceries was a good... I hate when people drop bags of groceries or bottles in movies, but this works
reveal,
well.
Reveal.
And then she's unwrapping.
Track, track, track.
It's like, what's happening? Huh?
Cue the music.
And then, wait a minute. And
keep
the
those horns going.
True moment of betrayal. It's like, what? She's changed? No, she couldn't have changed. Oh, she's changed. I was so disappointed.
Oh, that was
when I saw that, that's crushing. It was.
Know, it's an awfully quick transformation, given how they've basically established how long it takes with Richie.
No, but that's why he was saying sometimes it goes quickly and sometimes it goes slowly. Sometimes he remember that was a whole story when he was against the brink wall. He was saying one moment he was pale, next moment he was completely turned, tried to kill us all.
That was the setup
for this.
How does the white go through the already grown but dead hair shaft?
Magic.
Makeup.
Okay.
Makeup magic.
You don't want magic? Oh, okay, fine. It's a sci-fi film, I mean.
It's part of the microbe goes through the shaft of the hair and
that is nothing goes through
and basically sucks out all the pigment whatsoever.
There you go.
Uh-oh.
Richie!
Yeah, that's not good.
Oh, that's not
That's awful.
That was intense to show a young person like that in 1970.
Yeah, it was. Exactly. I mean, you know, they killed a kid.
Well, any time, but yeah, especially.
They killed a kid. Yeah.
Before
we need a flipping of a car or something.
You know, I think we need some lights. Eh? Uh-oh. We need a roadblock.
New York Street.
Oh, wouldn't he have cleared the trucks out? Come on.
In case he gets around this truck, let's put another car. Oh, in case he gets by those.
Jim, nice. You have your car flip. There you go.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
You have your car flip.
Quick, take that log.
What's he doing? He's dodging. He's going from left to right.
Serpentine.
The in-laws, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
Alan Arkin.
Oh mm-hmm. No, not the in-laws.
Peter Falk.
Serpentine shell. Like serpentine.
That. Now that's nasty.
Now wait a second.
Yeah, really shoot the car. Now I love this music.
Yeah,
right
this interesting keyboard they have going on right here.
Yeah.
But it's okay to use a bow and arrow.
It's like a kaleidopy
keyboard.
What
kind of explosive is this?
That is a satchel charge.
Satchel charge.
And where did the bullet holes go?
They started using them a lot in the Vietnam War.
Is it timed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Roughly.
That was
good. I think it's got a chemical fuse.
That
so once you activate it, you just pitch
it. Just shoot him. Put him out of his misery.
I like there's really Heston in the foreground of that explosion. Yeah.
Don't waste the bullet. And here they come. Shoot a few.
Isn't that the Ghostbusters car in the foreground, or in the background there, the white one?
I like he's just like, just get away, I'm just shooting at you.
Interesting choice of music to have that calliope keyboard.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
During that?
Yeah, absolutely. This music.
But I like the melancholy loneliness of it.
Now, wait a second. Did he reveal how to get into the house to the girl?
Mm.
It would be reasonable to assume that he did.
Yeah, he probably did.
I don't think they showed it.
He probably did.
But at the very least, she was following him, so she would have seen something.
Hmm.
This would have been before automatic garage door openers. How would he even have... He would have had to hit a button somewhere.
No, he had an automatic garage door opener
in
his car. Yeah, they showed it at the very beginning.
Oh.
Yes. Uh-oh. This is not good. I don't like this scene. I mean, it's good, but I don't like this scene. Uh-oh. Okay, she's wearing a black robe, dude.
Right.
Are you stoned?
Did you find my stash of hash?
Are you on the pot?
Hang on. I think he's really doing some good acting here. He's definitely doing good acting.
And to have them inhabiting his place here.
Yeah, look at me. Look
very,
very. I mean, look at Heston. I mean, this is now
his sanctuary.
His whole world is now challenged.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah,
the part of the world he tried to hold on to, which is what he put into his home here.
Yeah,
and now they are smashing every bit of it.
Well, they're about to, but
removing it, the old world.
Clearly, he has not been practicing his hand to hand.
Well.
With whom? With whom would he practice?
That's a good point.
Julius Caesar? Punching bag.
The Caesar statue?
Wing Chun dummy. Anything.
But maybe he didn't know enough or know any. I mean, basically, there goes Julius and everything. And now they're just destroying everything.
Those are grenades. Don't hit those.
Right?
Okay, that's a good point. But destroying all the research.
Yeah, there's a lot of chemicals.
Nice string line.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Tim's like, yeah, but listen to the music.
The music is excellent.
Part of the film. It's a good part of the film.
Yeah.
Let's destroy the art. That's almost like a machine.
Well, but the art represents...
Mm-hmm. Symbolism
through here.
It's
all about the old world. I mean, look, it's the old world. You got the busts.
Ah.
I mean, you have
apparently the cleaver, though. It belongs to the new world.
Well, it's a knife. It's an edge, you know, it's clubs. Ooh.
Whoa, what was that?
Bad jump cut. And of course, then they destroy the TV. They destroy which, narcissism.
Which is full of sparklers.
Yeah. Wow.
Social commentary.
It was all, wow, yeah, really, it was all nightmare. Wow.
How did he get that big screen TV? I'm just wondering.
He always had it. Mm-hmm.
Suddenly he's really strong.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Don't hit me with that paper mache club.
Yeah, really.
I'm going to take this beer and I'm leaving.
Well,
I think that was a blood sample, but
it was the blood. It was the blood sample.
Yeah, so they have you think.
Yeah, it's the blood sample. Compared to shoot. Okay, Neville, shoot them all. Just
whoa.
I guess if they have the axe, I guess you should run.
Oh.
This I thought was really cool is the fact that, you know, he's getting out here. So he opens a garage door and it's not dawn yet. And so, I mean, I like how that's built into the plot that they can't do anything until the sun's up.
10 minutes.
And
that
so
10 minutes, it does him in.
Ten, yeah. It
can just come down to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, he's not thinking of look up there. And of course, well, he's blinded by the lights. That's the thing; he can't really see. Okay, lame. The gun is jammed.
Ugh. On top of which, he has another magazine on his belt.
Man, you got a magazine. Pull out your pistol. Get out of the light.
He's got a handgun on his right side that he has never pulled out the whole movie.
Exactly. So that's what's kind of lame.
He couldn't even turn that spear. Did you notice this? He didn't have enough room to turn the spear so he could use it. Oh.
And of course. Ooh, Heston took that fall himself.
Yeah, he did.
Damn.
Good for him.
Yeah, hard to survive a nice big spear tip going into your chest.
That's a lot of little jump cuts in there.
What is up with the little jump cuts?
There are little jump cuts. And of course, now for Matthias, he doesn't care because he's killed Neville, essentially.
Here's our whistled rendition of the Omega Man theme in the background.
Yeah. It's funny that now she's turned over to with whatever the psychosis is of the disease. She says, you know, you're evil, the family is good.
What's wrong with her? Why is she falling down?
I don't. Well, that's kind of what's not. This is a little on the lame side. Oh, they cut off the power.
It's all symbolism. It's like,
yeah,
it was
she's
almost
collapsing.
Mary at
the
feet of
out.
Jesus, almost.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Because he was on the cross.
Interesting.
That's the way I see it.
Pierced with a spear in the side, etc.
So why didn't Matthias come and collect her? Why did he just leave her with him? Maybe he doesn't care. And they're singing songs. Okay.
Well, they must. Maybe they knew the sun was coming up, so they just decided to hide out. And maybe clean up his place, you know.
Well, they don't care anymore, though. He's dead.
I mean, what could have been a cheesy sci-fi little thing in 1970, I think the writing of what's being presented here is just wonderful.
Oh, yeah. They really...
They reached far, I think, mm-hmm. in what they were presenting for you to think about in watching this.
Okay, Chuck. Neville, go with them. I like how he drops it.
Oh, it's the serum. It's not
it's a serum.
Yeah, it's not a beer.
Yeah, because the blood would wouldn't last. That's the whole thing. The serum will. I love that jacket.
Well, both the serum and the blood were in the refrigerator, though.
Yeah.
Wait, what's going on? Why is she suddenly wanting Robert?
Yeah, really. Before he was evil. Oh, there he is. He's dead. That was his death scene.
There's his arms.
The arms spread out very, Jesus crucifix. On the cross.
He has a lot of fat on his hands, so it floats in the water.
Right.
Yeah.
That happens to me all the time.
Unlike most people.
Oh, and what killed him? The spear.
Right. The spear.
Like the spear of destiny.
Right. Well, you know that part where Jesus is crucified. Like, they nail him up there and everything else, and that's how they made sure he was dead. Was that they...
Was a spear. Right. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
They stabbed him with a spear.
They stabbed him with a spear.
Yeah, that's what
exactly.
I said earlier, with a spear.
I didn't connect it.
I just said it sideways, kind of.
Yeah. No, I didn't make the connection, but yeah, it's like... All right. They all wove it in well, and there you go. With a kid. And then you got the hopeful music.
I'm trying to say that this is the one part of the score that it just sort of grates me.
Yeah.
Mm. This theme right through here. It's a very odd, surreal choice.
Mm-hmm. It is odd. I grant you, but somehow I accept it.
Well, and with the period of the film.
I think that's what it is, with the period of the film. In other words, that even though he's dead...
Oh, look at it, and he's in the same position. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then,
that's great.
Then they go to the negative. Yeah, exactly, with the legs up like that. Yeah, I don't mind the music. I mean, the music, I think, is...
No, as far as hopeful...
Yeah, definitely hopeful.
But
yeah.
Actually, this is an alternate version. The original soundtrack has... the original version of this piece included on the CD of this. And the original one was not as hopeful. This was a hopeful version.
Okay.
There we go.
I didn't mind the hopeful, but yeah, I could see it with the other one. But
the end of the Omega Man, is that redundant?
Right. Kind of is.
The Omega of the Omega Man?
So Rosalind Cash.
Now, general education for those who may be listening, Omega is the last letter in the Greek alphabet.
If they didn't
Alpha being the first. Alpha, right.
If you didn't and in Beneath the Planet of the Apes, when Charlton Heston, I'm going to spoil it all for you who have not seen the film, basically, when they find the bomb that the mutants have, it's called the Alpha and Omega bomb. The beginning and the end.
Beginning and the end.
And what's interesting in the Bible, it says, I am the Alpha and the Omega.
Right. That's what Jesus says.
Jesus says?
Yeah. Rosalind died actually at the age of 56 in 1995.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot later than we thought.
Cancer.
I'm not sure. American singer and actress, best known for roles as Lisa in The Omega Man. Cash was the second of four children, 1936 to 19... Oh, that's your father. Yeah, so she lived 1938 to 1995. Obviously, that's not her father. Who was that?
And this was cancer?
Oh, that's her brother. Rosalind, let's see... Actually, it's not telling me in my... Oh, she died, yes, of cancer at 56.
Yeah. So, Duncan, what did you think the second time through with us talking about it?
Having seen it before and then actually being able to talk about it and everything, I think I got a lot more out of it as far as the symbolism and the cultural relevance and all of that. I think I kind of... You know, it's hard to watch a film... and not have your own perspective on it that relates to the culture that you currently live in and how you grew up and the things you're familiar with. So I think watching this initially, some things about it seemed old to me, right? Because of the period it was made in, and I'm not used to that style. But being able to go back through it and look at it in more of a critical sense, I think I got a lot more.
What's interesting is my mind does not go to the, religious... symbolism and all that very easily, and so watching this with you guys was actually really great because it is so very obvious, but it just isn't where I naturally go.
You're not looking
in my
for
mind
it.
I'm not really looking for it, but it's so very glaring now that you guys have mentioned it, so I'm pleased that I now have a different perspective on it.
Tim,
I think there's so many good nuggets of ideas that are underdeveloped, and I've always thought this would make they made I Am Legend, but again, I think the Omega Man would be a great remake done correctly, really produced well and well thought out, layered screenplay that develops all these top layer things that they show in this version. I think, again, the psychology alone would be amazing to do.
And then we'd need to do the Omega People. for Serge.
Yeah, we have to see. I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I think definitely worthy. I mean, the material itself, I think the relationship, I think the whole thing, the relationship between Neville and the family and how the family developed and all that kind of stuff, I think there's definitely a lot of a lot there that can be gone through. But I you know, once again, it's a warm blanket movie. There's a lot of nuggets in here, the music, just moments. You know, fun stuff to watch and enjoy. For some reason, this is a movie I come back to.
And I like the use in I Am Legend. I like the use of the dog. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if someone was going to remake this, I think I'd try and hang on to some of that and some of that emotion.
But actually, you know what? I kind of like to hear where, you know, it was just him. He didn't have a dog, didn't have a pet, and it was all him, and everything had to come from him dealing with his world and his imagination and just how he coped. I like that.
One thing I would have liked to have known is I mean, I sort of got the feeling that he started to have a loving sort of feeling towards Lisa, but I would like to have seen a little more investment opportunity in the emotional relationship.
I think
because he just gets it, he starts to get it, and then he's done. You know, he tries to save her, and then he's killed. But if I, you know,
to fully develop Neville between himself. That whole part of the film,
yeah.
To develop Neville and Matthias, to develop Lisa and Neville to their full potentials would be awesome.
Yeah,
was shortchanged a bit through a lot actually in this film, but it was you know brought up and it was presented, but it wasn't developed to my full satisfaction of what I'd like to see it done.
Right, yeah, definitely could be done more. Yes, Duncan.
I just have to say a side note. I have never seen copyright warnings in so many languages.
We're traveling the globe.
Still going.
Yeah.
Well, because they just put all of them on there. This for the Blu-ray. They just put them all on there so you can watch it in whatever country. Yeah.
Oh.
Let me go back to something I actually started like 2 hours ago, which was about Boris Segal. Boris Segal died sometime in the 80s, rather tragically, who was the director of this.
Really?
He died during a production of World War III, which was a TV miniseries with Rock Hudson. And what unfortunately happened, I don't know exactly. Actually, I know I found this out from this guy that I was friends with, and he told me about it because he worked on the film, and he was working with Boris Segal, and Boris Segal very tragically walked into a helicopter rotor.
Whoa. I never knew that.
Yeah, the back rotor.
No, it says, according to Wikipedia, he died in 81 in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and it says, does it tell me how he died? Wow. Father to Katie and Joe Segal and the twins Gene and Liz Segal.
So he died on set.
He died on set, and basically I think that shut it down for a little bit. And
it was a Twilight Zone incident, basically.
Yeah, I bet it wasn't like, you know, Twilight Zone where it, you know, the helicopter was it was a stunt gun. It was a helicopter, and he somehow walked into the rotor.
Here it is. On Wikipedia again. Let me credit them. Segal was killed in a freak accident during the production of the miniseries World War III, when he was nearly decapitated after walking to the tail rotor blades of a helicopter in the parking lot at Timberline Lodge. Oh, my God.
That's
I used to ski there.
Vic Morrow-ish.
A Timberline Lodge in Oregon. The same lodge was used for the exterior aerial shots for the Overlook Hotel in The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Segal was replaced with another director the next day. Segal's death
is
eerie in that among his directorial credits was the pilot episode for the TV series Combat, which the series starred Vic Morrow, who also died from being struck by a helicopter rotor blade.
Right. Oh, wow.
I guess when it's going, you can't really see it.
Oh, and they died slightly over a year of each other.
Right, the Twilight Zone
thing. At that same time.
Twilight Zone thing was around that time.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's unfortunately what happened to Boris Segal.
Boris Segal also directed Masada, wasn't the Peter O'Toole miniseries?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Boris
Segal, I believe.
Oh, wow.
I've been to Masada.
Nice. Wow.
Quite a sight.
So there's our backlot set on the Warner Ranch, where the Friends Fountain is right in front of it.
We're looking at the bonus features
on the Blu-ray.
On the Blu-ray.
This would be the set before they decorated it for Omega Man, obviously.
Yes. Well, no, actually,
it's probably the set today.
It's the set today, yeah.
Oh,
that's the way it looks now. But if you watch the end credits of Friends and they turn off all those lamps, those are those buildings right there where the lights turn off as well. And you can see Neville's right in the center. See his penthouse with the balcony?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's his place.
Yep.
I've been up inside there. I was up at that window over at the eyes of the same balcony where he had his infrared scope.
Wow. And did you think of throwing a spear at someone?
No, I didn't think about doing that.
And his infrared scope is featured highly on the one sheet.
Yeah. Because it looks cool.
Yeah. So, all right. On that note,
cool movie.
I want to thank you all for
see it again.
Awesome.
Yeah, really. Thank you, guys. Because that was fun to see. I haven't seen it probably in 2 decades or more.
Mm-hmm. I like me some Omega Man. So, anyway.
Let's do Soylent Green.
Well, that'll come up eventually.
Of course, if we remade Soylent Green, it would be, Soylent Green is made of people. Meh. You know, that'd be the last line.
That's a great idea.
No.
And your point.
Brilliant.
Meh.
Meh. Great.
But what flavor, people?
So on that note, now I'm hungry. Great. this has been the commentary for...
Thank you for having me, sir.
The Omega Man. Absolutely. And speaking was...
Jim Eustermann.
Okay, and we also thank...
Duncan K. Fraser.
And we super thank...
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. Tim McMillan.
And I'll thank myself. Sure.
Thank you, Sarah.
Hey, you're welcome. And this has been Film Grok. See you next time. Bye.